Ladies and gentlemen, this is your NXT North American champion, Adam Cole, baby, and you're listening to the Skip to the End podcast.
Skip to the End.
Welcome to episode 98 of the Skip to the End podcast, or should I say, Kurtcast.
Yeah!
Dadcast!
Papa!
As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it is going to be Kurtcast slash Dadcast, because we're going to have a lot of Kurt Russell-based content on this episode. And all of our long-time listeners know Kurt is actually our father.
Yep.
Really, it says it on our certificates.
It does.
I mean that literally. And it's appropriate as well, because this episode comes out 2 days before Father's Day. Oh. So here's a little present for you, Papa.
I hope he likes it.
I hope he does.
Dada.
It's a bit weird, though.
What have we got coming up on the show?
Well, our top three discussion is going to be our top three dystopian movies.
Oh, so many to pick.
Right?
Our rewatch is Big Trouble in Little China, so there's Dad already.
Yeah, big
time. He's there.
And our main review is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which is a sequel to a film that you might not have heard of.
Never heard of it. Sounds wank. That'd be a good one to talk about. Everyone's seeing it right now, and the Americans are only just getting it.
That's weird, isn't it? We got it, what, 3 weeks before then?
That's good. That's how it should be.
That's really lovely.
But in return, they get Ant-Man 2 weeks before
us. Yeah, because we don't get it because of the World Cup. Because we can't multitask. We can't go and watch some football and then watch a film later.
It's
weird.
Furious.
Grade A bullshit right there. But talking of non-grade A bullshit, we've got our third and final round of Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Who's playing who?
Oh my God, I'm glad you asked. It's Mark versus Ben. It's a big game.
Battle of the Titans.
The originators, the owners, the bosses.
It's what matters. Yeah. That's what people tune in for.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Kablamo.
I'm confident as well. I think I'm going to win it. There you go. I've said it now.
Well, you know, let's not jump ahead of ourselves here, Mark.
Big
you never know, do
big
you?
Big bloody words. You know what I mean? Arrogance, in a way.
Yeah.
And of course, we'll have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. We're going to give away a ridiculous amount of prizes. And if you can hear it in our voices, Mark and I are a little bit hoarse, a little bit worse for wear, because we've only just got back from the Download Festival.
I'm burnt to a crisp.
Oh, mate.
Look at my face.
I can see it. Look at my wrists. That's mental. Where my watch has been, you know.
Oh, my God. You guys are so burnt.
I know. And we're going to talk to you all about that in the outro of the show. But I'll tell you what, guys, let's get started.
A dark world. Civilization has gone to shit. And there's no hope for anyone. Our top three topic is our three dystopian movies that we really like. So basically, we're going to be talking about those dark futuristic films that give us the fear, but we really, really enjoy watching. So Ben, I want to throw this over to you first. What's your first one?
Blade Runner. I lied. I lied. No, not really. I'm joking. My first one is V for Vendetta. It's a political thriller about an anarchist freedom fighter in a Guy Fawkes mask and his young apprentice attempting to take down a fascist regime in near future Britain. It's based on the graphic novel from Alan Moore and David Lloyd. The dystopian element of the film is so powerful to me because it doesn't seem so far-fetched. It only seems one or two steps removed from reality. When Alan Moore first wrote the graphic novel, he was in the midst of the creeping fascism of the Thatcher government. But 30 years on, it seems just as vital and just as relevant now as it was back then, because, you know, we're in a shit show now as we were back then. So that's what makes it a difficult film to watch, because it doesn't seem fantastical. It seems very frighteningly real. And it's a great film in its own right, but Alan Moore, he, as he often does, he refused to support the film. He detested that the changes were made to it. His source material was, you know, very much about Britain, but the film is kind of like a watered-down idea of an Americanized version of it. But by its own standards, it's a great movie, isn't it? I mean, you've both seen it, haven't you?
Of course.
I've only seen it once at the cinema, and I absolutely loved it, and I'm hoping that one of us brings it as a rewatch, because it definitely needs the skip-to-the-end treatment.
I'm surprised you've only seen it once.
I know. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. I remember thinking Natalie Portman blew me away, and she looks bloody ace with a shaved head.
Yeah.
But I just kind of, I don't know, it's one of those ones that, it made me feel a bit depressed.
Oh, yeah.
And every time I turn the news on, it just feels like I'm rewatching it.
Well,
it's not a good world.
No, that's precisely the point. And you've hit on it there with Natalie Portman. She's arguably never been better than in that film as this kind of young woman drawn into V's fight. And that bit you mentioned, how great she looks with a skinhead. The fact that she shaved her head during the film, you know, that was a live take of her, getting it all gone. Her long flowing mane gone, which is a very brave thing to do, and they did well to get that in one take. Imagine if they fucked that up.
Oh God, what are you going to do? You can't do it with a rubber head, can you?
Rubber head.
Yeah.
Come back in 3 years, Nat, because we need you to grow your hair again and then reshave it.
It's been 5 years in the making.
And she has a good little double act with Hugo Weaving as well. He's masterful as V. He gives such a strong, emotive performance, which is all the more special because you never see his face.
Oh, it works.
How he can express such emotion when you never see his face move, his lips, or, you know, any part of him move. It's extraordinary, really. An incredible performance from Hugo Weaving.
Yeah, he's a very graceful anarchist.
I remember when I went to Forbidden Planet and they had the mask in there. Mm. It was only a fiver and I bought it. And I think it's one of the greatest masks and most iconic masks, like sort of Halloween.
Yeah.
It really is ace. And I think that this year, when it comes to Halloween, I might actually go out and start terrorising people with that mask on. Because it is a very cool look, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Problem is, you won't be the only one. There's always about 17 trees.
I want to be original, but I can't.
Go on, Mark. Your choice.
Mine's not very depressing. It's Wally.
Oh, you sweetheart.
It does count as a dystopian film, doesn't it?
I'll take your word for it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, have you never seen Wally? You're never going to either.
No.
That's a shame.
It is a really good film, and it's one of the first ones that I went to the cinema, and then I think I went back to see it because the animation is so, so well done. But he's deserted. He's in life in this abandoned big groundings with no humans, just basically going about his day, picking up rubbish. I'm trying to sell it to Ben. This is not going well.
Oh, picking up rubbish. Sounds good.
And then putting it into cubes of rubbish to save the planet and make it a cleaner place.
Jesus.
Pixar's finest, dude. Forget Toy Story and all these toys. But we do see the humans on this spacecraft. They're overweight. They're plugged into television screens. They've got fast food within arm's reach. Basically our lives at the weekend, Ben.
Yes, pretty much.
Just eat. And it's about him basically going on a journey to show us what the kind of fate lives ahead of these people. And it's actually quite scary because we're all becoming those people with phones right in front of us, delivering off Deliveroo, getting some other fucker to go and pick up our McDonald's. It's a bit too close to home, this film, but it's brilliant. And Wally is one of the most amazing characters that Pixar have done because he doesn't talk. So all his communications are through his eyes. And I remember kind of going and watching it in the cinema thinking, I need to own this on Blu-ray because it's the finest looking Pixar film until we've had Coco recently, where I was blown away by the animation. Everything about it is brilliant, but it's the whole use of silence. You know, there's no dialogue. It's just him going about his day and showing how sound design for Pixar is the finest out there. It is absolutely spectacular, but nothing happens. Really, nothing happens, but it keeps you entertained.
Really?
Because you entertained.
No, you're not selling it to me. It sounds terrible.
Help me, Gemma.
I love it. Good. I think it's such a wonderful film. It actually drew inspiration from the old silent Buster Keaton movies. So the whole thing with his eyes was very much from those kind of films of the era. But again, it's black and white movies. Ben ain't going to watch it, so let's forget about it.
Should I pick it as a rewatch, just so he has
please.
To?
No,
veto.
I'll veto his veto. You can
awesome.
Find me, don't worry.
Wow, it's going to happen. Come on then, it's your topic. What's your first one?
I'm going dark. I'm going A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, great film.
And that's definitely a future rewatch.
Hell to the yes. Obviously, a Kubrick masterpiece and stars Malcolm McDowell as Alex, the sadistic gang leader who causes chaos and ultraviolence with his droogs. Now, I should really get this out of the way. This is not a nice film to watch. It's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The character is no way sympathetic in any way, shape or form, and you are designed to hate Alex. And the whole premise of this film is it was shot in the 70s, but the whole overall look looks like a page from an IKEA catalogue. It's very futuristic, very stylistic and very colourful. But that's not the reason why I believe it's a dystopian film. So throughout the film, Alex is a pretty nasty bastard. He rapes, he beats up people, he kills, essentially. So for his crimes, he ends up going to jail. But he eventually volunteers for this conduct aversion experiment that doesn't exactly go to plan. So the whole idea of this experiment is they are going to try and revert him to become a citizen in society. They want to integrate him back in. So almost cure criminals, if you will. But it doesn't exactly go to plan because he starts associating things that he loves that objectively give him mass terror. So things like listening to Ludwig van Beethoven, which he used to absolutely adore. Listening to that segment of music just completely breaks him down. And it is that sense of, could we see this happening within the government? I mean, we know the government is pretty messed up at the moment, but would they ever go towards a faction of actually trying to convert these criminals into citizens that will walk and breathe amongst us, have jobs, just to cut down on prisons? Like,
the thing is, we're not that far off, because that's what mental hospitals do, isn't it? They're supposed to rehabilitate people and get them on the straight and narrow,
exactly,
and then release them. And then how many times do you hear about people who we're now told, oh yeah, they're not a danger to the public anymore, and then they go on a killing spree?
Hell to the yes. It's terrifying.
It's one of the most iconic films of all time. And when I was looking at posters the other day, because I want to get a brand new poster for my home, and I was thinking, the Red State one needs to be replaced. It doesn't look as good with it. But it's signed by Kevin Smith, dude.
Bin it.
But I was realising how great Kubrick is. Like, every film he has one of the best film posters. He has amazing performances. He has his own style that instantly you go, that's Kubrick. Yeah. This guy goes to every genre and nails it, apart from the one with Tom Cruise, which I've never seen.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Shall I ruin it, guys, and give it a go so I can say I've seen all of Kubrick's films? Yeah. Or shall I let it be a nice, clear run of just perfection?
Fit them all in.
Stuff it
like a sausage.
I think every director, especially the greats, are allowed to drop one bollock. Nolan did it with Interstellar.
Yep. Yeah.
Spielberg's done it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll let him do his one. But I want to revisit them all, because I think they're bringing them all back at the moment. I keep seeing them in the cinema being like on new prints, like 2001's out at the moment. I'm like,
yes,
I want to go and see that on the big screen.
Yeah. Oh, it's outstanding.
So as soon as I see this up there, I'm going, because again, I haven't watched it enough. I remember seeing the scenes. It's always in the top films of all time. I need to give it another go.
Yeah, and the score by Anthony Burgess, who recreated all the Beethoven tracks. It's so futuristic and so electronic. It works completely with this film.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing. And we're definitely going to do it as a rewatch very, very soon. It's been on my list for
like
2 years.
I think Ben's
going
to surprise in the next two episodes.
Right, round and round we go. Second round.
Mine is the 1995 movie 12 Monkeys.
Oh!
It's Terry Gilliam's noirish sci-fi about a man from a post-apocalyptic future travelling back in time to prevent the outbreak of a virus that wipes out most of humanity. One of the things I love about this film and love about this director is that Gilliam is a director with a totally unique worldview and directing style. He's kind of like Tim Burton in that you know within about 2 minutes who a film's been directed by. You know his style automatically. And his particular visual style, his visual aesthetic, lends itself to these dystopian and post-apocalyptic worlds, which is why he's revisited it 3 times. He's not only done 12 Monkeys, he also did Brazil.
Oh, so good.
In the 80s, and then The Zero Theorem quite recently, which was another really weird, fucked up one.
I've seen neither of them.
You've never seen Brazil?
No.
I'm not surprised you haven't seen Zero Theorem, but you've got to get on Brazil.
And future rewatch.
Is this when I tell Ben I haven't seen 12 Monkeys either?
you better be lying.
Oh, I am, but I've not seen Brazil, and I know it's iconic.
Yeah,
everyone says to see it.
Yeah, you've got to get on that. But his films always look gritty and grimy and in a state of disrepair. There's nothing shiny and new about his futures. That's why he's so right for these kind of dystopias. And another person who's so right for it is the film was co-written by David Webb Peoples, who also co-wrote a little film called Blade Runner.
Oh, so here we go. He's done it. I got it in one way or another.
So that fella knows a thing or two about dystopian futures, you know. The film is brilliant, and it's, as well as it looking great, it's held together by two absolutely magnetic performances. You've got Bruce Willis as the weary time traveller James Cole and Brad Pitt as the maniacal activist Jeffrey Goines. And without those two, the film wouldn't work as strongly as it does. I mean, tell me how great Brad Pitt is in this film.
As you said it, I was thinking, did any of us choose him as our masturbate for this film? Because if we didn't, it's bloody up there.
I think I did, but I could be wrong.
I don't know if you did. Yeah. I can't remember what the fuck I had for breakfast today. But if we didn't, it's bad, because it's one of the performances of a lifetime for him.
Yeah.
It was the thing that got him noticed in Hollywood. He'd had a few bit parts here or there, and you know, the studio didn't really want to cast him because he wasn't a big enough name, but Gilliam was hot on him, and it got him his first Oscar nomination. Because it's such a magnificent
role. I didn't
role.
Know that.
Yeah, it did. But the film is so twisty and turny and unpredictable, and it has one of the great all-time endings, which I won't spoil for anyone who hasn't seen it, but it really plays with the ideas of memory and fate, and it's a real kick in the nuts.
I love this film because everything's quite on a Dutch angle, but it doesn't go like Battlefield Earth Dutch angle. it feels really chaotic at all times. It feels like you're on edge and it's really frenzied, but I love that so much.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Another rewatch?
Yeah, did we not do it? We didn't do it, did
no,
we?
No,
we did, it's come up before. I think I've had it in topics before.
Yes.
But yes, definitely a future rewatch.
This is basically setting up our next rewatches right? for the next, what, 9 episodes? Yeah.
This is an exclusive.
And I'm not going to stop there, because this has to be a rewatch in the near future.
Come on.
They Live.
Oh, amazing film. Oh,
yes.
Roddy Piper kicking ass in the best way possible, and John Carpenter showing why he's one of the best directors in the business. Mm-hmm. A real simple story of a guy who finds a box of glasses that when he puts them on, he gets to see the real world as it is. We see aliens, we see his vision, and these advertisement campaigns that just fuck with people's heads. And I'm sorry, but John Carpenter, and you know how much I love him, we'll be talking about him later on the episode,
yeah.
but he's a god. And yes. I read, when I was researching this film again for this topic this week, a lot of people said, really love the film, but Roddy Piper ruins it for me.
What?
And I'm
sacrilege.
Like, who the fuck are you? If you're on our social media, I'm going to block you. And if I don't, if you're not and I find you, I'm going to beat you up and then chew some gum. Because this film is a masterpiece.
Mm.
And for the time it was done, again, it was predicting the future. Now we see Trump campaigns with that iconic
yeah.
kind of face that's done in the same font now with Obey and stuff mm-hmm. like that. It's scarily bloody predicting the future. And it's so well done. And I think we said before, Ben, it's probably got the greatest fight scene in cinema history.
Oh, hell yeah.
Between him and Keith David.
I think it's about 18 minutes long.
It's yeah. a lot.
Because it feels like a real fight, a slobber knocker, as yes. JR would call it. Because it goes on forever, and then you think it's finished, because they're both down on the ground, knackered. And then they slowly rise to their feet and just start whomping each other again. And it's like one of those, you know when people, someone tells a joke that's funny at the start, but then they labour it too much and then it's not funny.
Yeah.
But then they keep going, it goes all the way around to being funny again. That's what this fight scene is like. You get tired of it halfway through, but then it gets great again. You're like, this is mental.
Did you ever see the parody on South Park between Timmy and Jimmy?
No.
Yeah, and it was called, ridiculous.
Yeah, it was like one with crutches, one with a wheelchair. YouTube it, it's hilarious. And but they literally, everything is mimicked. Everything is mirrored from
like
they
live. Scene for scene, shot
yeah,
for shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
But it was done on such a low budget as well, like
yeah.
ridiculously low. And that's one thing I think John Carpenter needs credit for. He doesn't need multi-million pound budgets. He gets good performances from people you wouldn't expect and makes things look a lot better than they should. Probably the opposite of Kevin Smith for you.
Yeah. He is the opposite of Kevin Smith in almost every conceivable way.
There we go. Beat that, Jem.
I'll try my best. I'm going to go to the 70s, and I'm going with 1973's Soylent Green.
Ooh.
I've not seen this.
Ah.
Ooh, don't spoil the big ending
I
for him.
I won't at all. It has one of the biggest twists in films, but it stars Charlton Heston as a detective that takes place in the future of 2022. Basically,
so far away.
I know. We've only got a few years, fellas. The world has been ravaged by the greenhouse effect and overpopulation. Food is now a commodity, and people now survive on these processed rations produced by the Soylent Corporation. One of their biggest sellers and the most popular ones is a food called Soylent Green. So they're small green wafers that are produced from high-energy plankton. It's the most nutritious out of them all, so it means everybody wants a bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this results in a lot of riots on the streets. Aside from all that, the CEO of this company is murdered, so Charlton Heston has to go and find out exactly what the hell happened. But this whole film is really not a million miles away. Obviously, it's 2022, we're in 2018, but it plays on the whole fear of food running out.
Mm.
So the farming community, dead on its arse. The meat community, dead on its arse. Dairy, forget about it. You might as well go vegan while you're at this rate. But it's...
Even then, I wouldn't go vegan. Even if... Fuck that.
But this film depicts New York City as this poor and dangerous wasteland with no hope, and desperation is pretty much ruling the whole streets. And one of the most terrifying scenes of Soylent Green is during these riot scenes. So everybody's on their last legs. They need to get this food, but there's too many of them. How are they going to do it? So in order to control these riots, there's these great big trucks that have this kind of scooping kind of mechanism. You know, like when they're gritting the roads, or if they're trying to clear out some wastelands, and this big old scoop thing.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, I'm not au fait with construction machinery. Sue me.
Big scoop thing sounds about right.
Thank you.
That'll do.
But these big trucks scoop up these people to get them out the way, and then tip them at the back of their truck whilst emitting this terrifying high-pitched noise. And it's really, really scary. And it's just basically a way to control these people going, oi, you're down at the food chain, off you pop. But where do these people go? You gotta watch Soylent Green, man. It is so good.
I've not even heard of it.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah.
See, that's mental because it's like a horror film. And
yeah.
it's
kind of your genre. Yeah.
I should just start watching films, I think, for this podcast.
It's on Amazon Prime at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's Amazon Prime.
And I think the guys at Last Exit to Nowhere t-shirts do a Soylent Green t-shirt mm-hmm. as well.
And we don't need to plug them because they're already on our side.
Yeah.
The whole film's got this weird kind of green tint too, so it's kind of connecting with the name, but it's totally worth a watch, and I strongly recommend you go give it a go.
I promise you I will.
Thank you.
Yeah. One day.
Will he?
No, I will. I will one day.
Tends to lie.
Yeah, just don't put a time limit on it. Just no. Nebulously, one day yeah. he will see it.
There we go.
Next Tuesday, I will see it. Last round.
Yeah, and it's interesting you went with Soylent Green, because my pick has a very similar sub-storyline about suspicious foodstuffs,
ooh.
And it's Snowpiercer. Which is one of my favourite films of Christ knows how many years. It's a sci-fi actioner about a class system aboard a train that circumnavigates the globe after climate change renders the planet uninhabitable. And the film follows the lower class citizens at the tail of the train as they rebel against the elite class citizens at the front. It's an utterly, utterly loopy concept based on an equally loopy French comic and directed by the entirely loopy South Korean director Bong Joon-ho. Often these days, dystopian movies all feel pretty much the same. You know, people have been ripping off the Blade Runner model for 30 years.
And still are.
And still are. But, you know, Ghost in the Shell. But this film feels fresh. It feels like nothing I've ever seen before or since. You guys have both seen it. You both liked it. What else looks like Snowpiercer? What
nothing.
Else feels like Snowpiercer?
Nothing in the world ever. No. And it never will.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Entirely and utterly unique.
And do you know what, dude? I really, and I've said this before, I really want to do it as a rewatch more than everything else we've mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's fucking hard to get hold of.
Yeah.
I remember you having to buy the DVD from like some French company, didn't you? And that's the only way we got to see it. And I think it was it on Amazon for like a week.
It was on UK Netflix for a bit. So it never got a proper release in the UK, either in theatres or on home video. And a lot of that was the fault of known arsehole Harvey Weinstein. So he ended up buying the rights to the film for Miramax or whichever
sick
company was
mouth.
Running at the time. And he was a prick about it because he said to the director, Bong Joon-ho, I don't like this, you need to cut 20 minutes or else I'm not releasing it. And the director said, no, fuck you, this is my artistic vision, we ain't cutting shit. So he basically cut his nose off to spite his face a little bit, but that meant that Weinstein screwed over the release of it. So you still can't get it on DVD in the UK, you have to buy it on import as I did. But the annoying thing is that the European versions that you get don't have British subtitles for the parts that are in Korean.
Oh.
So if you truly want to enjoy it, you got to learn Korean first.
Oh my
any
God.
Any excuse.
Yeah, but as Mark mentioned, it was on Netflix UK for a while, but sadly it's not there. So please, for the love of Christ, Netflix UK or Amazon Prime, bring it back. Bring it back. People need to see this movie because it's glorious. The direction and especially the production design are first rate. The film is a real, real treat for the senses. And again, anchored by really strong performances by Chris Evans, especially as the leader of the revolution, and a really slimy villain performance from Ed Harris, and a really batshit crazy turn from Tilda Swinton, which we've discussed previously.
Yes.
It's such a brilliant film, all ends up, and I just wish more people knew about it, or I wish more people had access to it.
Mm-hmm. If that doesn't sell it to you, those list of names, then you're dead inside.
Yeah, and Billy Elliot's in it.
There we go.
There you go.
His actual name is Billy Elliot.
It is, yeah.
There is layers upon layers with this film. There's so much to analyse, so much to talk about. I do think it is, it's certainly the top five best films of this century.
Yeah. It was my film of that year. I think it was 2013. It was my film of that year.
Mm.
And, you know, it gets better and better whenever I do see it. And it was one of the first films that made me realise Chris Evans wasn't just this handsome, pretty boy Captain America. He's actually a really, really good actor as well and deserves more plaudits for that.
Yeah, it's got chutzpah.
Let's make a deal right now.
Okay.
If Amazon are listening, or Netflix,
and
they put it on over the next week or two, it'll be a future rewatch, so you get all these thousands of people listening to us talk about it.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can't
and
argue.
And if their subscriber base goes up in accordance with it, we get a cut of the buns.
Yes.
Yeah.
And our own little skip to the end weekly review show on Netflix.
Yes. Yeah, this seems fair.
All for just, what, for a few plugs?
For $9.99, a few plugs.
Makes complete and utter sense.
Is it really our last go? It's not fair. I like this topic. I couldn't not mention this film. It's one of the greatest films of all time, especially for the golden age of cop films, RoboCop.
Oh, yeah. I was very close to having it myself.
We've had it as a rewatch, and I'd love to do a rewatch of a rewatch, because I just want to talk about it again. One of the most violent films of all time. When shit's kicking off and the crime is getting out of hand in Detroit, what would you do, Ben? What would you do at that moment? Would you start building robots with police?
Definitely.
That's the
first thing I think of.
And would you let it go to shit?
Yeah. Why not?
And forget the rest of the films. For me, this is a standalone film. In my head, just like Lost Boys, there's only one film of all time.
We'll see.
But this film is amazing. One of the most violent films you'll ever see.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I'm spoiling this for you. You must have never seen any films, because everyone I've ever met has seen RoboCop. And more importantly, everyone loves it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I've never met anyone who doesn't like RoboCop.
Yeah.
Never. If there's anyone out there in listener land who doesn't like RoboCop, tweet us.
So we can block you.
So we can block you and never speak of you again.
And you'll never win a future competition. Yeah. Hey. We're going to kill off our fan base today. But it's a great film. The style of it's amazing, and it's so iconic. And you see, like, they remade it, didn't they?
They did.
And I never watched it. This is like Old Boy. I never went and re-watched
it. Was it with Jai Courtney?
No, it was the other one. It was Joel Kinnaman.
I get them mixed Easy up mistake. All the time. They're so boring.
Have you guys seen that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
How is it?
It's awful.
It's not as atrocious as the Old Boy remake. That's offensive, the Old Boy remake. It's just bad.
It's still an abortion of a film.
But just go and watch it. You don't need to hear me talk about RoboCop. You've got a rewatch. Go back and listen to us, because we nailed that rewatch, I think. I think we did pretty well. But you will never get a better, more iconic cop film that will make you just want to cheer, will also make your stomach churn. And when you think that someone's going to die and the death scene lasts about 2.5 minutes, it's kind of that Simpsons where it's like, he's already dead. It's that moment. He's getting shot to shit. His chest is going up and up. The flesh is coming off, and you think it's going to stop.
Yeah.
It doesn't. No. It's one of the best scenes of cinema history.
Is that when, like, they blow his hand off as well with a shotgun? That's
it
fucked.
Looks so well done.
It does,
literally, like, blowing up a rump steak.
And I remember when I was growing up, me and Tim, my mate, back in Shrewsbury, it was a site called Movie Time, and we had to get Region 1 DVD players to get the full uncut version, which is out everywhere now on Blu-ray. Mm. But at the time, that was like a, you got it, really? Should we come around and watch it? Oh, man. And it's only about an extra 2 seconds, but it was unbelievable just to see that bit more blood at the time. Yeah. It was like, I'm glad I spent 25 quid on that DVD and got custom charges for an extra tenner, but I got the full version. Amazing film.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
Oh, so good. Well, if you've got the big daddy, I've got the son of RoboCop. So my third and final choice is Turbo Kid.
Oh, great film.
So it's set in a post-apocalyptic wasteland of 1997. So it's kind of like a time travel dystopian film, but a comic book kid decides to adopt his favourite hero to save a super happy friend and a bastard of an overlord. And this has so many retro nods to the 1980s culture, which makes the film so much fun. And it's also really violent. This doesn't piss around with the blood and the guts and the gore. It actually revolutionises the whole gore factor. I mean, you've got one scene where someone becomes a human totem pole, where they get two or three people, like their torsos are chopped up.
Oh.
And for some physics reason or whatever, that top torso becomes the top part of someone's head, and then it becomes the top part of their head. Seriously, it's totally worth the gore.
Sounds mental.
It looks cool as well. It doesn't look cheap like Tusk. It's done well.
No. But it's creative and it's quite unflinching at the same time. Even the weapons, they're quite mental. You've got an intestine-ripping bicycle.
Nice.
And you've also got, like, a super-sized sledgehammer that, like, completely flattens somebody's head in, like, 2 seconds. Have you ever seen it, Ben?
No, I have not, because I assumed with the name Turbo Kid it was a kiddie film.
Heck no. This
the opposite.
This doesn't mess around whatsoever. But even the colour palette, because you've got the wastelands that's really brown and dark and kind of nuclear, but the characters are all in, like, bright red and cyan and pink, and it's a really fresh and fun, exciting film. It's quite low budget, too. It didn't really do sort of a cinematic release, did it? It was more or less sort of more popular when people found out it was on demand or it was on DVD. But the soundtrack's really kind of got that futuristic 80s vibe to it too. It's a fun dystopian film, but it's also very violent.
I'll check it out now.
I really did
judge a book by its cover on that one.
Yeah, oh, it's brilliant. It's got my favourite character of all time, who's a bit too happy for you, so I don't know if you would like her, but she's great. Apple.
She's incredible.
Is this the one you interviewed, Mark?
Yeah, she's a good girl. But what?
Throw a little plug in there.
She's a good girl.
What's really good as well, this film's directed by 3 directors all at the same time. That's quite rare, and I reckon there must be a lot of clashing on set.
Yeah, can you remember their names, Mark?
Again, he interviewed them.
No.
Okay.
They're like Nope.
Never mind. I'll just tell you. It's Francois Simard, Anouk Whissel, and Johann Carl Whissel.
As if I'm going to know them.
Not Ivonk.
No. Ivonk was on holiday, unfortunately.
But Gemma did actually forget the best weapon of all. A gnome stick.
A what now?
A gnome stick. Like a garden gnome, right. As a stick that you beat people with.
Bizarre.
Yeah. You know, it's a pretty self-explanatory match, right?
It reminds me a lot of Stranger Things with a lot more violence.
Yes, definitely.
So the soundtrack is very, very Stranger Things. And remember, this was before Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of talk, and I think it's been greenlit. We are going to get a sequel soon.
Are you kidding me? How, though?
Well,
how with the old ending?
Oh, you just have to listen. You just have to listen to Mark and me
for the
directors.
Vote.
But do check it out. Forget everything else I've said to you. Don't watch Wall-E, because you never will, but do watch Turbo Kid.
One day.
It doesn't have to be now. Yeah. One day. Yeah. It's a good film, dude.
Wonderful. Shall we hear what the good people of social media have to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Let's go to Twitter first. A podcast on movies and sometimes other things too, at APOMASODD. That's a heck of a lot of letters. Metropolis.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Fritz Lang. What, very really?
Awful. I know.
Ah. Children of Men.
Excellent choice.
Amazing film.
I had Cash Money, Ben. You were going to say that.
I nearly did.
Nuts. And Equilibrium.
Another one I very nearly had. A brilliant film. Very underrated.
Mm. We should have done this as a top 10.
Yeah.
It's far too many to choose from.
When we started Skip to the End, you probably listened as a fan.
I did.
We used to do top fives.
Yeah. You did.
And when you came along, it had to change.
I know.
Because you got more to say.
Well, your top fives took like 3 days. Yeah,
and to be fair, back then we only had like 3 features per show. Yeah.
Bradley Williams at chili_willy19. Waterworld.
Oh no.
That's going to be a rewatch.
No, it isn't.
Veto. I've still got a card. Mad Max.
Yeah.
And Escape from New York.
Oh, I should have had that.
Oh, Dadcast strikes again. The Movie Bunker podcast at movie_bunker said The Road.
Yes,
oh, great so film. Depressing.
Massively.
Viggo Mortensen.
Oh, boy. Wall-E.
Good choice.
And Tank Girl.
Oh, my. I've not seen that in years.
Oh, yeah.
Co-starring Ice-T, who we saw at Download this
weekend.
There
we did.
Yeah. Oh,
Ice Cube, as I said.
Oh, no. No, please.
Not to him.
He really
not
to did.
Him. Oh, my God.
To like a press guy. He said, oh, what time's Ice Cube going to be here? It's like, no, it's Ice-T.
God.
Fucking idiot.
I'm so embarrassed for you
right
now.
It doesn't just happen in this room. You do know I do talk like this once I do leave this place.
I'm so embarrassed for you.
Imagine being me.
Gavin at Mini Media RVWR said Snowpiercer.
Awesome.
Of course. Battle Royale.
Yeah.
I would have put my mortgage on Ben picking that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was being really picky with what I decided was dystopian and post-apocalyptic and all that kind of thing. I didn't think this quite fit, but it's still a great film.
Of course.
And that's definitely going to be a rewatch.
Oh my God,
hell
yes.
Hell to the yes.
And Akira, which was a rewatch.
Magnificent.
Great. Mm.
Over to Facebook, we've got Toby Gaffney said 1984.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
What?
Good
really?
Film.
I know.
Film.
Okay. Brazil.
Yeah.
Mm. And of course, Blade Runner.
Of course.
Of course, we had to get that in there somewhere. Danny Sava said The Terminator.
Yeah.
I'd have gone T2, but yeah.
Yeah.
The Fifth Element.
Oh, amazing.
And previous favourite rewatch of ours, Idiocracy.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Then finally to Instagram, we've got Bob Christian at autistic_poet said Snowpiercer, A Clockwork Orange, and Elysium.
I mean, yeah, not a great film, Elysium. It's actually better if you on repeat watches. It gets better the second or third time.
Okay.
Not a great film, but it's okay.
Yeah. Some great stuff from social media this time around.
Thank you very much, guys. So, whose turn is it next?
That would be me.
Hello.
So, way back on episode 36, which was in January of 2016, we did a topic of top 3 comebacks. So, it was actors and actresses who had their big comeback moment and brought them back into the spotlight. So, what I want to do is a twist on that. Next time, we're going to do our top 3 performers who need a comeback.
Oh, yes!
I like it.
Love it!
Welcome to Jurassic World.
We've been to our local View cinema to see Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. This is the follow-up to 2015's Jurassic World and sees the heroes from that film, played by Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, return to Isla Nublar to rescue the remaining dinosaurs from an impending volcanic eruption. Their plans of finding sanctuary for the dinos back in the US are shattered when they find out sinister forces are planning to use the dinosaurs for their own personal gain. The film also co-stars James Cromwell and Rafe Spall and features the great Jeff Goldblum reprising his role as Dr. Ian Malcolm from the earlier Jurassic Park films. Now, Mark, you and I went to see this together. Gemma went separately. So I want to throw this to Gemma first because I could maybe sort of gauge your reaction from it, from your body language, but we didn't have Gemma in the room. So, Gemma, what are your thoughts on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom?
That's a good start.
She loved it.
Predictable, painful dialogue. Ooh. And there was one or two bits that I actually did enjoy, but I found the whole process exhausting. I know we're probably going to get three more films of this, judging by what happens at the end. I just say, let what happened at Isla Nublar and just let the thing go extinct.
I loved it then.
Didn't put any punches there, face. Did she?
We need to be filmed, I'm telling you.
Done.
Look at that.
I'm done with this. You know, keep it at what Jurassic Park was. That is a classic film that came out 25 years ago, about that time. Yeah. That is an amazing film, and it was such a special time, especially as a kid, because I'd never seen anything like it. But I have now, and let's just call a spade a spade. Let's just call a Diplodocus a Diplodocus.
She didn't love it, dude.
No, not so much. How about you, Mark? You know, please improve the mood.
This film had a lot of plot holes. There was no good dialogue. Story made no sense at all. Waste of space, but I enjoyed it a lot. Mm. I had a lot of fun because I got to switch my brain off and I just went with it for 2 hours. I wasn't expecting this big, absolute Oscar-worthy blockbuster that had all these great Nolan-style writing and Scorsese dialogue. It was just stupid. And sometimes you need stupid. Sometimes you need a big blockbuster where you have some popcorn and just go, meh, doesn't make any sense, but it didn't need to. And that's what I got from it. And I didn't expect much because I didn't like the first one. So it wasn't going to suddenly blow me away and I'd be like, oh, wow, they've totally changed it. It's better than the original. I had a lot of fun, dude. And I had a great time in the cinema.
Yeah, I kind of echo what you've said there, Mark. I enjoyed it a lot more than the last one, possibly due to lowered expectations. It's that Solo thing we had again. You know, we went in thinking it was going to be shite, and it was slightly better than shite. You know, in fact, it was a lot better than
slightly
shite.
Better than shite, Ben.
It was just a solid turd rather than a runny one.
No, I really dug it, especially the back half of the film, maybe the final third of the film, which I thought was really unexpected. So that's where I want to start. So the first two thirds of the film, well, the first third of the film is our heroes going back to Isla Nublar to rescue the dinosaurs. Then the second act, really, the second third of the film, is just some pointless shenanigans that I've forgotten. But then the third act of the film all of a sudden turns into Predator.
Yeah.
Or Alien, you know. Yeah. That kind of horror where they're running around this big mansion and you've got that bizarre newly bred dinosaur chasing them down and popping up from everywhere. I didn't expect that. I did not see that coming, that type of film. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. I thought the final act was genuinely gripping and a hell of a lot of fun.
Have you noticed he's starting to like horror a bit more?
We're getting him. We're slowly breaking him in.
And that's what was good about it. Because the thing is with this film, and it's one of the... I think it's the most guilty I've seen for this. I felt like I'd seen the whole film from a 3.5 minute trailer. Mm. It told you everything. We see Blue almost die. We see, obviously, Chris Pratt come back. Oh, is he going to? Is he not? So we knew all that. And then we knew that, obviously, they were going to start attacking the families. And that kind of an element of... It's just the whole horror element of, oh, I'm opening the door like the original. I'm going to walk in and come into your bedroom. Ugh. But it worked. And when I saw it in context with the whole 2.5 hour film, I liked it. I really did. And I had a bit of a chilled element. I was like, this is a bit freaky. Like, these are genuine threats. They looked scary as fuck. Where in the first Jurassic Park, which is a masterpiece and it is absolutely perfection, the dinosaurs were quite friendly most of the time. We saw the ones that they stroked and, you know, they looked a bit dumb and they could eat the grass and feed them. And it was quite nice and some of them were quite sweet. In this, there wasn't any apart from Blue. Everyone else was like, I'm going to rip you and eat you to pieces.
What about that big one that sort of was left on the island when the clouds...
Just burning.
That actually brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he still probably would have at you if you got close to him. No, I don't believe he was nice.
Herbivore.
Yeah, he was a total veggie.
He might be, but if he's about to burn to death, he'll eat you.
I don't think he will.
I don't think that's ever happened in the history of the world. Going, oh, it's getting a bit hot here. Oh, can I nibble on your knuckle or something?
Your knuckle. Talk to us about the ending then, Gemma. So clearly it didn't work for you as well as it did for Mark and I.
It didn't, I'm afraid. I felt like it was a very quick, contrived ending because, of course, we see our heroes. Are they going to let the dinosaurs suffocate in this small room or are they going to let them roam free?
The dinosaur gas chamber scene. Yeah. That was some dark shit.
That was really heavy. And I thought, yeah, that they are going to because they need to save the world. And then little Miss, you know, Smarty Pants decides to press the button, which I must say, that little twist with the little girl I really liked.
Yeah.
So it turns out she's not just a little girl. She's actually a clone of her own mother.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Pick your jaws up off the floor, people.
We probably should have given a spoiler alert at the start of this,
shouldn't we? Oh, yeah, never mind.
Too late now. Fuck it.
I did quite like that, but it did infuriate me that she was the one that got to press the button. I would have liked it. A little bit more clout would have been given if it was Chris Pratt or Bryce Dallas Howard. But it was this little lady who's been in, 10 minutes of the film. She's like, I choose to have a franchise, bang. And now we've got friggin' velociraptors causing chaos at the tables in Las Vegas.
Well, see, that's why it had to be her that pressed it, because Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt's characters, they're adults who know it'd be fucking stupid to release dinosaurs into the world. So if either of them had pressed it, it would have been the most idiotic thing in film history. It had to be the kid, because she can get away with it, because she's a dipshit child.
I kind of like that, because it would have been like Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of brings me on to something I wanted to talk about with Chris Pratt. I really like Chris Pratt. I think he's a great actor, but I don't like him when he's trying to be suave.
Me neither. And that's the biggest problem I had with this film.
Yeah, I like him when he's a goofball. He's a lovable goof when he's Andy Dwyer in Parks and Recreation, or even when he's Star-Lord in the Guardians films. But in this, he's trying too hard to be the cool guy who's smouldering. Yeah. It's like, you know, you're a handsome fella, but, you know, you're the goofball. You're the fun guy, you know.
I think that didn't work for me. I think he uses these films as like a audition for Indiana Jones. I think he wants to obviously be in the next Indy. So he's like, I'm going to use this because I'll be honest, in this film, he didn't have a big part. Like, I didn't care for him. I didn't need him to return. Like, that was done in 10 seconds. The editor, I think, said, right, you've got a 3-hour film here. We need to get down to 2. We need to chop the shit out of this because it felt so rushed. Like, will he come back? Will he not? Oh, he's here already. He's actually in the back of the van. He's ready to go. Hang on a minute. A minute ago, he said, I do not want to go back.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. And suddenly he's in the back by the time you've even got to your car. Ridiculous. That was starting to annoy me.
Unbelievable.
And if you want to get me really wound up, the one thing that annoyed me more than anything, and it's on the Babadook level of annoying kid, is the boy. He was scared of everything.
Oh, Franklin.
Yeah.
Asshole.
This little idiot. And he was constantly shitting himself and getting them all.
Yeah.
He's a liability.
He should have
been thrown to one of the dinosaurs to be eaten because every 5 minutes, oh my God, piss off. You're supposed to be a hero. We don't want this little shit.
I liked all of the characters except him. He was just an anus. I really despised him.
But he was, and he just wound me up. And he never did anything good. If at the end he was the hero and he went, I'm going to push the button, which wouldn't have been a good thing to do, but something, I will attack the T-Rex and save every human in this world. But he didn't. No. He should have been killed off.
He didn't do anything redeeming throughout the whole film. And also, I hate to admit this, but I didn't find there was any chemistry between Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt.
No.
There's nothing. It left me a bit cold. So when they did finally join forces and start working as a team, I wasn't invested.
The one thing I did like about their relationship is that they didn't try and do that horrible forced banter with them not getting along, that kind of, or they'll fall in love in the end, because they did that in the first film. In this film, as soon as he decided to come along, they just worked together, they helped each other, they didn't dick about, and I liked that. It saved us that bullshit again.
Mm.
I think the thing I really liked about Bryce Dallas Howard's character is her entrance to the film. It starts with a shot of her shoes, and she's wearing her high heels, and that's a nice little dig at the previous film, because there was all that thing about why would she be running around Jurassic Park in high heels? I like that. That was a little callback.
One of the things that did stand out for me, and this is where I'll give it a lot of praise, is I think the CGI looked great.
Oh yeah.
So in the very bad sequels of Jurassic Park 2 and 3, they look awful and they do look dated, where the original, which is 25 years old, looks unbelievable. But in this, I think they've took it to a whole new level. I enjoyed Jurassic World for what it looked like, but this I really did get blown away. And every dinosaur looked genuinely scary, looked like it would rip your arm off at any chance. And I think they need credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'll definitely agree with you. The whole auction scene where you see all the dinosaurs being auctioned off and sold to the highest bidder, the way how they moved, that the cock of their head, the way how the skin sort of reflects within the light, I really thought was impressive, and I won't take that away from the film.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the CGI was flawless, and I think that played into the fact that there were some set pieces that were just so well directed. I've got to give props to J.A. Bayona, who directed this. What was the film he did before? It was a film you really liked about some, I think it was like a monster cause or something like that. Did he die?
Yeah, I think he did.
And I think he did a great job with this. It's hard to corral real actors and a load of CGI dinosaurs into anything that makes sense. But there were a couple of scenes that I thought were amazing. So the opening scene of those guys on the island trying to retrieve the tusk of that dinosaur. You know, when they're then trying to fly away in the helicopter, and that gigantic fish dinosaur, the Mosasaurus, jumps out and bites that guy. How great did that look?
And the whole size of it.
Yeah.
You see
yeah.
this helicopter going off, and you think he's saved, but again, the trailer fucking ruined it for me. I'm going to keep swearing today. I'm enjoying swearing today. You know, sometimes
cut back. Yeah,
this
fuck
is
it.
Fuck cast.
I'm going to try and say more than whatever Limp Bizkit song says it, but I am. I'm going to swear all the way for the rest of it. I'm really enjoying swearing. Fucking
all right.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah.
But why did they fucking do it in the trailer to then fucking ruin it in the film itself? It annoyed me because I wanted that suspense of, oh man, he's got away, this is a good start. Then it comes out the water and the size of it is insane.
Yeah,
amazing.
It is ridiculous when they give away all the goodies in the trailer, isn't it? It's absolutely insane. One of the scenes that they didn't thankfully give away that I thought was brilliant, in fact I thought it was the best scene, is when Bryce Dallas Howard's character and that little asshole Franklin, they're in that kind of bubble car thing, and then they go underwater and the bubble car starts to slowly fill with water, and Chris Pratt's character is outside trying to break his way in, and they're fighting and slowly drowning, and it was all shot to look like it was done in one take. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure there was CGI trickery and editing trickery there, but it looked absolutely amazing. You're in there with them, you feel like you're suffocating as they are because the camera never cuts away. I thought that was an amazing bit of direction.
It's my second favorite part of the film. I really do give props to that. It's the whole choreography too, because it does, you do feel claustrophobic when you're watching that. You think, oh my god, they're actually gonna kill off one of the main characters. Oh no, they didn't. Here comes Chris Pratt. Okay, done.
Well, I was hoping the kid at that point was going to be drowned, so we didn't have to put up with him for any longer. I was cheering, so
never
you might have
mind.
Felt like claustrophobic. I was like, come on, die, oh damn, he's saved. He wasn't an hour and a half of him whinging and being a little git.
He was a git. Mark, what was the first thing you said to me when we came out of the cinema the other day?
What rating is that film, dude?
Yeah, because I think it was a 12A.
That is ridiculous.
It should have been a 15.
No, there's full on eating humans.
Yeah, I don't think you see any blood, but it's bloodless carnage, but it's carnage nonetheless. You see men get ripped in half.
Yeah, Rafe Spall becomes two Rafe Spalls.
Yeah.
There were literally kids of like 4 or 5 years old in the theatre with us.
And
what? I'm like, this is not suitable for those dudes.
Jesus, give them a Peppa Pig episode.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason why I dug it, because they had really lent into that, the gory nastiness of it. What would happen if you were standing in front of a carnivorous dinosaur? He's not going to gently nudge you with his snout. He's going to eat the fuck out of you. So I like the fact that they showed the reality of it, as real as this ever could be. But, you know, they lent into it and I dug it.
It was. It should be a 15. So if you're listening, change it to a 15. You know, you listen to us. We know what we're talking about. But do you know what annoyed me? It's only a little thing. You know when these dinosaurs were on this conveyor and they could bid?
Yeah.
And it was like a live eBay auction. I didn't think a dinosaur...
Are you sure?
I thought 10 million was quite a bargain. I don't think they were selling for the prices of what they should. Because footballers go for like 80 million now. Lukaku, people like this.
Did you have a budget in mind?
Well, I think a dinosaur that is going to protect your whole nation, like these Russians were buying, should be paying 300-400 million.
Yeah, no, I get you. But I think when Snapchat sold to Google, it went for 6 billion.
Yeah.
If that stupid fucking app where you can take pictures of your knob is worth... $6 billion.
Put like a filth, like some dog ears on it.
Well, yeah, exactly. A little dog ears on your bell end. You know, if that's worth $6 billion, then, you know, one of these fucking Indoraptors should be worth a hell of a lot more than 10 mil. You're right, I'm with you, Mark.
Other apps are available to take dick pics, such as WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. And vaginas and boobs should also be taken.
That's true, you know.
But it's true.
Equality.
I didn't understand it. They were saying it can fight off. It's like a missile weapon for you. 8 million?
Yeah.
Bargain, I'll have two.
Well, maybe it's like...
how much money you got knocking around, Mark?
Yeah, we charge. You didn't know, but we started to charge customers now who listen to this podcast. So we're going to buy a dinosaur.
Maybe they're like dinosaurs from Lidl.
Yeah.
You know,
own brand dinosaurs.
Exactly.
But it did play into something that I liked. It's I know, Gemma, you're kind of dispirited about the idea there's clearly going to be more sequels to this.
Yeah, I am.
The thing I'm kind of happy with is it sets up a very different type of sequel. So at the end of this film, we've got some of these like moneyed Russians have bought some of these private, you know, dinosaurs for their private armies. Some of the dinosaurs have escaped. Now we've got this little clone kid. So at least that means the third Jurassic Kingdom has a whole different world to play in. We're now living in a world where dinosaurs are roaming free or they're being weaponized, and we've got clone kids as well. It's not just going to be another film of dinosaurs on an island. It's at least going to be a different type of film. So that excites me. I at least it won't just be a carbon copy of what we've already had.
But at least make the script believable.
Okay, but I'm expecting something like Predator meets Alien meets Westworld. And I'm up for that. I'm well up for the next film.
You guys are so positive. I know. I think it's so adorable. I'm just, my hope is gone. I do feel like the franchise is tired. I feel like it's a little bit knack. In my opinion, I totally respect where you guys are coming from. But for me, I am bored. We're getting these blockbusters that are coming left, right and centre. Some original. Obviously, we've got Marvel completely dominating the whole movie market. But I am bored. I just want something that hasn't been recycled. I want something original.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a problem with Hollywood across the board. One thing I would agree with you on with regards to this film is the thing that made the original Spielberg Jurassic Park so great is that Spielberg gave you this sense of awe, this sense of wonder that you were seeing something you'd never seen before and never really imagined.
Yeah.
Whereas now, the Jurassic World films, what's this? Was that the fifth film in the Jurassic Park franchise?
Sixth, I think.
Fifth, sixth, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it just makes it seem mundane now. Dinosaurs running about is normal now, and it should never be. It should always be wondrous and full of awe.
Yeah, remember when you heard the first Jurassic Park score where you go, da, 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 that bit, and it does that is spectacular, and that matches exactly how you would feel if you were seeing like a Tyrannosaurus T-Rex. Never mind, I thought I would go big with the name T-Rex. When you see a T-Rex running across the field, you're like, bloody hell, that's a T-Rex, man.
Yeah,
but I'm just the magic's gone. Maybe I'm older. Maybe I'm no longer a kid.
Mm. But the magic, they don't care about you. They want about the new
kids.
Well,
they should care about me. I'm very important.
They want the new young puppy pooches.
Fuck the young puppy pooches.
Yeah. That's who they're looking for now. So you know that those kids will be saying, remember the original Jurassic World? That was amazing.
Then they'll be like, you weren't there. You don't know what that was like.
Yeah.
I think we've said all we can say on this one, haven't we, guys? Shall we score it?
Yeah.
I want to throw it to you first, Gemma. I think this is going to be low. I know you don't pull any punches with a low score.
I don't. But I'm also going to be a bit generous because those two scenes we talked about are amazing. So I'm going to give it a fair but disappointing 6 out of 10.
Oh, that's hot. I thought you were going to give it a 4.
Oh,
I thought you were going to stick the knife right in.
Oh, I couldn't to old Andy Dwyer.
Yeah, 6 is all right. Mark, what have you got?
7.
Yeah, me too.
There you go. So that's overall about a 6.
It's a 7.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right then.
So Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10.
Are you crazy? Is that your problem?
It's competition time. There we go.
Classic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like
well
that.
Done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. If you listened to our last episode, which was Solo, a Star Wars story, you'd have heard that we gave away a shitload of awesome prizes. And we're not going to stop now. So, you know, expect loads of great ones, but I think we should basically announce the winners of last time's competition first. Let's not get too ahead of ourselves. So first of all, as I said, Solo Star Wars, we had to celebrate with some Funko Pops. They gave us a set of all of them. Really, really good.
Tremendous.
And to keep it in line with Solo, what we said was, what was the first song from Corey Feldman's solo album, Former Child Actor? Now, that's a real simple question. So, Gemma?
Yeah, it is Former Child Actor.
It is. I love it when bands call the album the same as the song. Yeah. I love
Synergy.
That.
It's definitely not lazy.
No, and he was the first to ever do it. I bet
he was.
You didn't know that.
True story.
Pioneer.
And Edward Prosser got that right, and he's on email. So more people should email, because if you notice, quite a lot of people are winning on email. And I think that goes to real winners as well, not the people that just retweet everything.
Big time.
Exactly. I like it. So enjoy that, and I want to see pictures of your pops. Is that right?
Funko Pops, that is.
That is. Our last Exit to Nowhere friends came along, and because they have a t-shirt for the Millennium Falcon, we kept it in line with Star Wars. Ascension Millennium is a track from which Corey Feldman double album? Ben?
arguably his greatest work. It's angelic to the core.
It is. And Tom Joy knows that because he's a massive fan. He's another Corey file.
It's such a tune.
He's a convicted Corey file, that one.
He is. And he'll be getting that T-shirt. What are you drinking there?
Just cracking a cider.
Well, hair of the dog, innit?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what? I'm going to have one. Chuck us one.
Yeah, pal.
Thanks, dude. Let's have one.
Do it stone cold style.
I like that we're not editing this. Thank you. I feel like shit today, and it is a bit of hangover from the weekend, but that time. Helps. That does take the little edge off
take
it.
The edge off, yeah.
Back to more competitions. They have a great T-shirt for Star Wars. Now, it's really, really cool. Fly Me to the Moon in the Star Wars. It's such a nice, unique design. We kept it in line with that. I'm Flying Away is a song on which Corey solo album?
Clearly, former child actor.
It is probably my favourite album of all time.
It's pretty good.
It is damn good.
It's up there.
And Clive Bullock on Facebook, who's a huge Corey file.
Yeah.
Huge. Knew that straight away.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to see that T-shirt. I want to see you in it. Post the picture and use the hashtag
Feldfam.
Feldfam.
Yeah.
There we go. Richer Sounds came along. They gave us a brand new, not second hand from a car boot.
Oh, good.
Brand new
yeah.
JBL soundbar. So when you're watching your Corey Feldman films at home,
mm-hmm.
or you're listening to his albums, mm-hmm. it sounds better than the little shitty speaker you get on the bottom of your TV.
Big time.
Because TVs are getting thin now, but you need the sound to be fat, especially when you're listening to bands like Truth Movement. You do. You do not want tinny sounding speakers for stuff like that.
Agreed.
No way.
No.
And we kept it in line with this. This is very sensible this time. What is JBL's real name in WWE?
See, now I think some people are going to have said John Bradshaw Layfield, which is his gimmick name, when his real name is John Charles Layfield.
Ah, so Luke Richards on Facebook said just John Layfield, and
oh,
I liked
that's
him.
That's cheeky. Oh, let him have it.
Let him have it. His name's Luke. He seems cool. He loves wrestling. He probably loves Corey. If he doesn't, he's not getting the prize.
He's dead to us.
So send a picture of yourself listening to a Corey album, probably Imagine by John Lennon.
Greatest cover of all time.
All time.
Mm.
And we didn't stop there. We like to reward people that take the time to leave us an iTunes rating. And do you know what? Every single day I think we get a new rating. We tweet them out, we Facebook them out, and they're really good. Like, someone called us today the Jaffa Cake of Podcast.
I saw that one.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Love it.
McVitie's. Is that who make them?
Probably.
Whoever makes Jaffa Cakes, send us some. We'll eat them.
Bloody love a Jaffa Cake.
Bloody. And they're only 1 gram of fat in each one.
Is that right?
So you can eat 100. Not feel too bad.
Really?
Yeah. Probably bullshit, but they look pretty good. So yeah, iTunes ratings have to be rewarded. So what we did is we said we'd give all the Funkos plus 2 bobbleheads away to anyone that leaves us a 5-star rating. And I have to go for this name.
Good luck.
Bishop's Fingers, that's really? His name. Love it. Said said the greatest movie podcast ever, and I have now subscribed and got everyone I work with to subscribe to. And I'm hoping he, like, works in, like, a hospital, so there's hundreds of people, not just a shop with him and his mate, because that's not a big reward. But I'm glad, so you're going to get all that.
Amazing.
Lovely. Amazing.
Lovely.
Jem, you don't sound very impressed. He's told everyone, and they tell their friends, and they tell their friends. We get more subscribers, more Corey files. It's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
All I want in this world is more Corey Feldman fans.
I do.
It's the only reason why I do this podcast, to spread the word of Corey.
Amazing.
The gospel of Corey.
As I said earlier, we have to give some stuff away again. And as we've just reviewed Jurassic World 2, I wanted to call it that. I don't like Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
It's easier, isn't
it? Lose track. Is it the first? Yeah. Is it the third? Mm. No, Jurassic World 2.
Off the lips.
Good old Sully's come along from Funko.
Hey-o!
A set of 4 Jurassic World 2 Funkos. Mm. I love that.
Is there a Franklin one that I can stomp on?
There isn't. I don't think they even made one. I'd set fire to it. You know, when you were a kid and you used to burn plastic figures, I would do it with him.
Well, you might have done that.
Geez, that's
the fumes.
Not
psycho.
That's not the normal thing to do as a child.
Made me a bit weird.
He's still going on about it.
Oh dear.
So we're going to be sensible this week. Who directed Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom? See?
Yep.
Straight to the point.
Did say it in the review as well. So
the clues
are there.
Gotta listen.
Secondly, they've also given us a set of 5 for the old school fans, for us adults, Jurassic Park Funkos, which are awesome. They're really cool. They look really smart.
Yeah.
Let's say who directed the original Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
That's also been mentioned, I believe, today.
Yep.
Indeed.
As shortly we'll be masturbating over Kurt Russell, they haven't stopped there. We've got a set of 3 Guardians of the Galaxy Ego Pops, which is Dad himself in Funko form. Let's say, which character does Kurt play in Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
You literally just said
Yep.
Like seconds ago.
I like that we're being sensible this week. It's good. Yeah. It feels a bit more mature.
Oh no, is he saying something else?
It's coming.
I'm not, I promise. No.
It's coming in our faces.
Gemma! Degrading.
Do you know what I mean?
Women.
I just said that we're trying to be...
I just know we're going to get a face full of Feltman.
I just said then, didn't I, how mature we're being.
Yeah.
And she has to go and let the side down.
Ruined.
I'm only saying the truth.
Last Exit to Nowhere know that we're going to be re-watching Big Trouble in Little China. So they're going to give us the Pork Chop Express t-shirt.
Love it.
Which is ace.
You've got that one, haven't you?
I have. It's beautiful. Who direct... It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
Who directed Big Trouble in Little China?
Okay.
And do you know what? On the rewatch coming up, we might tell you. You never know.
We might.
Tease.
We will. But not only that, they've given us a Jack Burton baseball cap.
I love
the trucking style hat, which looks ace. Gracie Law is played by which actress in Big Trouble in Little China?
Mm-hmm.
We were going to, and I'll say this now, we were going to review Ocean's 8 on the next episode.
Yeah.
It's true. And I kind of did speak to our friends at Warner Brothers to get an Ocean's 8 bundle.
Uh-huh.
But we're not going to review it anymore.
Nah.
But we've still got the prize.
Super.
And the prize is pretty tasty, probably unlike the film. You get a stainless steel flask, a t-shirt, a tote bag, a beach ball, a diamond rose pen. I don't think it's probably going to be real, you know, gold, but who cares?
Diamond and gold!
Why would it be gold if it's diamond?
What did you get in your GCSEs for chemistry?
What are GCSEs? You get a wallet and you get a USB travel adapter, all with the branding of Ocean's 8. A nice bundle there from our good friends at Warner Brothers. So what should we say? Anne Hathaway plays which character in the film Ocean's 8?
Good enough.
Okay.
And finally, one more prize, some AKG Bluetooth headphones from Richer Sounds. And these are awesome. No wires needed. Which Corey Feldman track would you first listen to when you receive the headphones in the post? Because it's blowing ourselves off a little bit.
It's what?
Blowing ourselves off a little bit. If we say, what podcast would you listen to? We don't need everyone just to say skip to end, because everyone should be listening.
Yeah, that's a
course.
Given.
So what Corey track? And there's hundreds to choose from.
Yeah, go for it.
Essential Millennium.
Imagine.
Love Left.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
What's
good
Wrong
one.
With Youth?
Yeah. How does she know so many?
Because I'm part of the Feld fan, Mark.
You are a convicted Coryphile.
Guilty!
I love it.
For me, I thought she was just a suspected Coryphile, but she's now a full-on convicted Coryphile.
I'm out. I'm proud. Get used to it.
I love it. The best way to enter our competitions, because we still get people asking, even though we make it very apparent on the episode, is all you have to do is go on skiptheend.co.uk, enter via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, email. You heard. Someone won today via email. It's not dead. Email is still popular.
It's not dead.
Is it? It's dead. And that's all you have to do. And then in 2 weeks' time, you tune in to Skip to the End and find out if you've won. It's that simple.
Wait a minute. I'm a reasonable guy, but I've just experienced some very unreasonable things.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite performance from said actress or actor that we pick out from the pot. On the last episode, woohoo! You love it when we call him Big Popper. It was Kurt Russell, Daddy, to Skip to the End. I cannot wait for this one, guys. I don't know about you, but I'm tremendously excited and I'm ready to masturbate. Yep, there was no space in that sentence.
Gemma.
What?
She's being filthy today.
Disgusting.
What, warning? No?
What?
Verbal
warning. Yeah.
Shame. Mark, this guy means a heck of a lot to you, and I think it's only right if I throw this to Ben first. No, I'm only joking. Mark, I'd like to throw this to you first. Come on. What's Daddy's best performance?
RJ McCready, The Thing.
Oh, as if it was going to be anything other than that.
Questionable, yeah.
He is an absolute master of acting, and he is. He can do comedy, he can do horror, he can do action. But in this role, I feel he does everything perfectly. He does give you those emotions of a man that's in a situation that is just uncontrollable horror.
Yeah.
To know that you are you're being forced to lead a group of men who are basically about to get fucked over by a creature, and there's no way to help. It's an emotional breakdown. It's horrendous. You're seeing people getting picked off one by one by a creature that just suddenly came in as a nice little dog and then suddenly turned into a creature that's going to kill everyone around you, turn everyone mentally in a state where everyone's questioning everyone. And I don't think there's a film that does suspense at times like this film.
Yeah, suspense and paranoia, like you've just sort of
paranoia
touched on.
Paranoia is the perfect word. I'm dumb, I wouldn't have thought of that word, but that's a great word. And I think MacReady's the coolest motherfucker to hold a flamethrower at the same time as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to give him credit. His beard looks cool.
Yes.
His hat looks cool.
Yes.
His coat looks cool. He's just cool. And I think him and John Carpenter are a match made in heaven. Sometimes people work with directors and it just works.
Yeah.
And in 1982, when this came out, as we know, like Blade Runner, it didn't do very well. And now it is a complete horror cult classic that people are obsessed with. Myself included.
Yeah. Just a bit.
I do think this film is so well made. And I'm not actually picking the film because of John Carpenter. I'm not picking the film. I'm picking the performance.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes me have paranoia and suspense like no other character I've ever seen in film. And at the end, you don't even get a nice happy ending. He's left, he knows it's all fucked, but like probably you would, Ben, he has a whiskey and thinks, fuck it, and that's it. And I love that. And even at that point, I'm thinking, you're the coolest man alive. He's accepted his fate, he has a whiskey. Probably, what whiskey would you have if you were about to have your last moment in life?
If it was going to be my last moment in life, it would be Lagavulin 16.
That's what's it
called? Go on, say it.
Lagavulin 16.
There we go. Lagavulin.
No. Nearly.
Nowhere near.
Yeah, they'll send us some Vagalubin. That's probably like Russian Viagra. But it's a great film. He is the man, and I've obsessed over this film way too many times on this episode, so that's me done.
Yeah, and that bit at the end when he just sits there and accepts his fate and has his whiskey. I think he's with Keith David, isn't he?
He
was also in They Live, and I love that scene between those two guys. But you just can't beat him in this film. I only saw this film for the first time, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
On your recommendation, of course, because you've been banging on about it for years. And for once, you were right. It is a tremendous, tremendous film.
He did the same for Yoga Hosers.
He mugged you off, mate.
Yeah, but Yoga Hosers have damaged anything else. I can never come back from that.
Ruined. That's why I've still never seen Tremors.
Until the next rewatch.
Yeah, it's a fantastic performance. It was very close to being my pick as well, to be honest.
Didn't you revisit it? I remember you texted me this week a picture
I did revisit it. It's a wonderful film. And every time I watch it, there's always something new I notice. You know, where you notice about how certain characters act and just before they're about to go through this transformation.
Mm-hmm.
It's astounding. It's an incredible bit of story work. There really is nothing like this either. Mentioned it. But those of you who have never seen this film, come on. I mean, you listen to us. I mean, Christ, what else are you going to do with your lives? Just watch it. It's so worth it.
Dum dum. Dum dum. That intro. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Oh.
Come on, Ben.
I'm going to go with a fairly modern one. I'm going with Sheriff Franklin Hunt in Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, wow. What a movie.
I mentioned Snowpiercer already. I think Snowpiercer and Bone Tomahawk are my two favourite films of the last decade. They're that good to me. And in this film, it's a Western horror about a posse led by Kurt Russell who ride out to rescue their town doctor from a cannibalistic tribe of cave dwellers.
There you go.
Just a normal standard
film.
Say
that
there,
again, though. Yeah.
I think it's an absolutely flawless film, and a large part of that is due to Russell, of course, because Sheriff Hunt is no nonsense. He's a man of honour, direct and full of authority, and not one to be fucked with. Even when everything's gone to shit, he's still calm and in control and just unfazed, and he's coming up with plans of how to save them from these troglodytes. And spoiler alert, if you've not seen it, when he finally dies, he goes out like an absolute boss. He's getting shot at by these troglodytes who are using guns for the first time, but he manages to kill a couple of them on his way out and save the other guys before succumbing to his injuries. And it's just Kurt being Kurt. It's Kurt being a cool motherfucking badass till the very end, till his last breath. And something that I think is fantastic about Kurt Russell is this transition he's made. So Mark mentioned about how he can do it all. He can do drama, comedy, horror, all those kind of things. Something that I've noticed is in his younger days, he played a lot of charming rogues. And we'll see that when we talk about Big Trouble in Little China later on. But as he's got older, he started to play a lot of grizzled, grumpy old bastards. And he's amazing as that as well. It's the same kind of career transition that Jeff Bridges made.
Nice.
Those two together. Yeah. You know, I'd love to see those two as a couple of grumpy old gunslingers in a film. That would be fucking brilliant. And the thing that amazes me, with all this talent he has and with all these different kind of roles he's done and can do, it's extraordinary to me he's never been nominated for an Oscar.
I know, it's disgusting, isn't it?
And what they'll do is, like Leonardo DiCaprio, because he's owed one, they'll give it him for doing a remake of Grumpy Old Men in like 10
Jeff
years.
Bridges.
Yeah,
I'd watch it.
And I'll be up for it. But yeah, I just think it's that just makes me angry, dude.
Yeah, it upsets me. But talk to me. You both have seen Bone Tomahawk. What do you think of him in this film?
What I think's weird about that film is it just no one's seen it. It's like a little hidden gem.
Yeah.
Like, you tell people, so many people from our Twitter and Facebook have gone, I see people uploading pictures that they found in charity shops and DVD shops of Bone Tomahawk. And everyone is like, oh my fucking God, how did I not know about this film?
Yeah.
It's a hidden gem. And I don't understand, maybe it didn't get a big cinema release over here. It was like a week or something.
Yeah. Mm.
The sculpin scene in that
film.
Oh
my goodness.
And when they chop the dude in half as well.
Yeah. It stays with you, and it's not done badly. It's not over the top, like we said, with like Tarantino blood. It makes you feel like that's what it'll feel like when someone scalps me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a masterpiece.
It is, and it didn't have a big release here. It didn't have a big release in the States either. I think it made something like 400 grand in the States, which is fucking ridiculous.
That's like The Room.
Yeah, it is, honestly.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, the level of violence is on another level. However, I find Kurt Russell's presence is this authoritative kind of fatherly figure. He's out there to protect these guys and get them home safe and sound. But you know with him, you've got a safe pair of hands. You know you're going to be looked after, and he's going to be there until the last man is out there.
And, you know, obviously we're talking about him specifically, but the acting across the board is brilliant.
Oh my God, yeah.
Patrick Wilson's amazing. Matthew Fox, who's most known as Dr. Jack Shepard from Lost, he's brilliant in this. Mm-hmm. As a kind of ladies' man, suave gunslinger. Everyone is so, so cool in this film.
Yeah. I miss Jack.
Me
I
too.
Do.
It's that film, I think, is the only thing he's done in the last, like, 3 years.
He's been stuck on an island, dude, for
That's
many
true,
years.
Yeah.
We've got to go back. But yeah, but I just do miss him, and he's a good actor.
Hella good.
Watch now, next week he'll be cast as bloody Iron Man or something like that. something massive. What? You know what the power we have.
That's very true.
Watch this space. What have you got then, dude?
So, I'm going for the performance, not the film. Mm-hmm. So my choice is Stuntman Mike from Death Proof.
Fair play.
Fair play.
And this is exactly why MMD is so good. We're not waxing lyrical about that particular film. It's all about the performance that these actors and actresses put in. And I absolutely adore Stuntman Mike because this is Kurt Russell having fun.
Yeah.
This is on the level of Overboard. I love Overboard so much.
So good.
It was nearly going to be my choice. Yeah. But with this, he has this edge of creepiness about him. So when we first meet him, he's scoffing down a bowl of nachos, like unapologetically. You can hear the noise, smacking of his lips, and he's just there just to stuff his face and have a beer and just enjoy his own company, until we see him offer a ride to a lady called Pam, played by Rose McGowan. And it's all very flirty, it's all very fun, and he's like, yeah, come with me, I'll take you home. It's until she gets into his car that his demeanor just stops. The story progresses, and we discover this twisted and murderous facade that comes across his face as Stuntman Mike. He says that the car is deathproof, but it ain't for her. All of a sudden, you just see him ride across the road just maniacally, just ever so now and again, charmingly looking at her. But then when he decides enough's enough, he's going to kill her, slams on the brake. Pam, meet Dashboard. Dashboard, meet Pam. And he doesn't care. He's actually quite misogynistic in this film because his victims are primarily women. But again, he gets away with it because he's got a twinkle in his eye. He knows that this isn't going to be getting him an Oscar nomination or anything like that. It's a B movie. It's supposed to be completely out of context and over the top. And Kurt Russell delivers over the top, especially at the end. He gets shot in the arm by the women that are going to kill him. And he starts acting like a massive pussy. Nah. He just starts like screaming and crying and hollering. He's like, oh my God, I can't believe you shot me. But again, this is a testament to Dad's work.
Yes.
He loves just giving it his all. He knows this is a shit film, but fuck it, he's gonna have a bloody good time.
The way he goes out,
yeah, oh yeah,
with that tire across his head and face,
yeah,
is
yeah,
horrendous.
Yeah,
then the axe kick to the face on the floor, crunch.
I wonder what the axe wound was like.
Disgusted. Mark, I know you've historically you've said you hate this film. Have you tried to watch it again anytime recently?
Shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I agree, Russell is great in it, but I kind of feel like I need to give it another go. I don't hate it as much as you. You've said before it's Tarantino's worst film, hands down, and I agree it is, but I don't think he was trying to make a Tarantino film. As
Gemma's
just mentioned, it's a B-movie.
Yeah.
It was intentionally a Grindhouse-style B-movie, so I don't think you can hold it up against your Pulp Fictions and your Inglourious Basterds. So I need to give it another go, I think. I think I'd enjoy it more, but Russell is great.
I might do the Grindhouse Night and do them both back-to-back. Yeah. Oh, that might make it a bit more acceptable.
I really like Planet Terror.
Planet Terror is amazing.
amazing.
If I lost a leg, I'd stick a gun there. I would.
If someone else loses a leg in this too.
Yeah. I literally can't. I don't even try and remember what it was like. It was that shit. It just pissed me off.
I feel like we're about to enter a counselling session.
I watched it once and it just infuriated me. I was like, oh my God, Dad is working with Tarantino. Because at that point we didn't have 8 for 8. It was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? It's not cool, dude.
But then we did get him in 8 for 8, which we didn't really like. But Dad is great in that.
Exactly.
But Dad has also been cast in the new Tarantino film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which now has the greatest cast in the history of films.
Oh, yeah. They're packing a punch, aren't they?
Margot Robbie, Al Pacino, Timothy Oliphant, Brad Pitt, Leonardo DiCaprio, Michael Madsen, Tim Roth.
Timothy
Holy fuck.
Yeah, it's mental. Get Tommy Wiseau in there and
that's
it's done.
Need. That's all you need.
Fingers crossed.
Genuinely, and I'm being serious now, Corey would have just topped, cherry on the top.
The thing is, I'm sure Luke Perry's in it. If Luke Perry's... fucking Perry's in it, Corey could be.
Yeah.
Seriously.
No. Dylan!
Yeah.
Dylan.
Maybe it will be, like an uncredited cameo. Yeah. Comes on, just does a bit of dancing for him.
Go for it.
The good thing about this is that we get to now hear loads of social media telling us Dad's finest work. And I'm proud to be his son.
Oh, me too.
Are you? Daughter?
Thank you. Yeah. I was going to say me three, but then would have suggested I have testicles.
And you're not a chap with flaps.
No, I'm a chick with no dick.
Yes.
This has got a bit gynecological for me. I don't know. Too much.
Gynocast.
Yes. Yeah. Let's get to the social media, shall we? Daniel Christie on Facebook has said, Bone Tomahawk is my favourite performance by the one and only Skip to the End Dad. Plays such a good badass. Correcto Mundo. On Twitter, Mike at Mikey Cubed said, has to be Wyatt Earp in the brilliant Tombstone, a tour de force performance alongside Mr. Kilmer. Love you, Dad, he said.
Aww.
What a masterpiece.
Yeah, and I love how everyone realises he is our dad.
Yeah.
It's not just us saying that, the world knows.
I don't want you to read any out, dude, that don't refer to him as dad.
Right, that's the end then. See you later. Greg Waterworth on Instagram at Destro Vega said, I'm going to go with his balls out turn in Captain Ron. His performance is way above the quality of the film. I've not seen Captain Ron, have you?
I've heard about it.
We shouldn't admit that, because we always tell Dad we've watched everything he's done.
Yeah.
I missed that one.
I saw the front cover of the VHS, and it looks kind of like a Weekend at Bernie's type film.
Does he look like a nerdy science teacher?
I'm all over it.
I'm done. That's this weekend.
Yeah.
On Twitter, Helen Nutter, at Helsey33, where to begin, she says, but the thing, always the thing.
She knows.
Mm-hmm. Andrew White on Facebook, Death Proof, agrees with Gemma. Even though the film leaves a lot to be desired, when Russell is on screen, the film works. His ability to flip between menace, charm, and maniacal glee is the reason why he simply is the daddy.
Yes!
Not the daddy, our daddy.
Yeah!
Rob Butler at Tyrant0125 on Twitter has said, Sergeant Todd 3465 in Soldier. I haven't seen this film, have you guys?
No.
I'm really not up to work with Dad. This is not... We're going to get grounded.
We're going to get our asses turned.
I do need to see this one, because again, it's written by the writer of Blade Runner, and he said it's an unofficial film, or not a sequel per se, but it's set in the same universe as Blade Runner.
Oh,
unofficially.
My lord.
Unofficially.
I've not seen this, dude.
Whoa.
I know. On Instagram, Andrew Donlan, at andrew.donlan, it's got to be Escape from New York. Snake Plissken made short guys cool before Hobbits came along and Peter Dinklage.
Probably my number two, honestly. Phenomenal.
So good. We did that as a rewatch, didn't we? Long time ago, I think.
We've never done it.
Have we not?
No.
We've talked about it.
Dude, every episode.
Maybe it was a pick for something. But yeah, we've talked about it.
It will be a rewatch.
Nice. Hell
yeah.
Jeff on Twitter at JeffJames73. I would have to go with Mr. Russell playing Gabriel Cash in Tango and Cash. A great movie with tons of action and comedy.
Amazing.
Aww.
Such a dumb film. Andrew Neal on Facebook. My favourite performance is Overboard. A bit dark, but done in a really clean way and just a feel-good movie.
Oh my God, I love him in this.
I had not seen that film. And one of our followers, Fran Elizabeth, literally said, you need to watch it. And I was like, okay, I'll trust you. Even though I don't trust you two on the podcast who recommend films, I listened to her because she said it's him with now Goldie Hawn, who's obviously a real-life couple. The chemistry is off the charts.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's phenomenal.
That's not true. That story is absolute bullshit because I picked it. I think it was in our top three feel-good movies.
You did?
I did. And then he went away and watched it the next week. So I don't know where he's got this shit about, oh, some listener told him to watch it. I fucking told him to. And he did.
We just caught him in a lie.
Wouldn't be the first time. Absolute bollocks.
Do we tell her at this point we're kicking her out? Because that's not a lie.
Kicking you out. You're
oh, shit. I'm gone. See ya.
And then finally on Twitter, Susie Bennison at Suzarella, she said, oh my God, can there be any other answer than Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China?
Well, find out shortly.
Stay tuned.
I'm horny, so it's time to masturbate again.
Marvellous. Well, there are only two names in the part.
That is tense.
There were 50 names in the part when we started this, and two remain.
Let's give him a drum roll.
Please do. Here we go. Who's it going to be? So, on episode 99, we're going to be masturbating over Jack Nicholson.
Yes!
It's on the reflexes.
It's now time for the rewatch, and as it's Dadcast, it's Big Trouble in Little China. Kurt Russell plays hard-boiled truck driver Jack Burton, who gets caught up in a bizarre conflict in San Francisco's Chinatown. An ancient Chinese prince and Chinatown crime lord has kidnapped a beautiful green-eyed woman, who is the fiancée to Jack's best mate. Jack must help his best mate rescue the girl before the evil Lo Pan uses her to break the ancient curse that keeps him a fleshless and immortal spirit. The film is directed by John Carpenter, and as always, we're going to ruin it. But as always, if you haven't seen it, you're going to get blocked. That's how crucial we've got to be with this. Right then, as it's Dadcast, I'm ready to... You probably know I'm quite excited.
Yeah.
Ben, tell me your thoughts on this absolute masterpiece.
So as you know, Mark, I hadn't seen this film at all until about 18 months ago.
Oh shit, when
we went to our local independent cinema to see it. We just happened to see it listed and we were like, oh, we've got to go see it. And I was kind of like, you know, I know what Mark's like with 80s films. He thinks any film that was made between January the 1st, 1980 and the final day of 1989 is a masterpiece. So I didn't know what to really expect, but I came out at the end of the film like, that was genuinely brilliant. So this is only the second time I've seen it, and I love it. It's utterly, utterly ludicrous. The fight scenes are so over the top, they completely defy physics. But it's just so much goddamn fun, isn't it? And it's got Dad in it.
Yeah. And you don't need it to make any sense.
No.
You don't stop and question at any point going, what is that monster all about? That's ridiculous. Yeah. It looks stupid. Yeah. It looks dated. Because you're just loving life.
Absolutely.
If you don't like it, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to say what I'm going to do, but it's going to be messy. Make of that what you want.
What are you going to do?
Just tell me you love it.
I'm worried.
I feel like this is an entirely different topic for the podcast.
Come on, Jem.
Oh, come on. How much fun is this? This is great fun. It's arguably the most fun that John Carpenter's had in his films. I mean, Mark, you and me, we are big John Carpenter fans.
Yeah.
And this is so outside of what we know him for, like Halloween, They Live. This is not part of his remit, surely.
No.
But it's colourful, it's bright, it's ludicrous, it's so silly, but it is so much fun. And I defy anybody who doesn't watch this film without smiling, because I had a great big grin throughout the whole film on my face. It's classic, it's fun, and you know what old Jack Burton says? It's all in the reflexes.
I think that's where we need to start with this. Let's talk about Dad.
Obviously.
And I know we have a lot today, but this guy knows how to kick ass. He has humour, but I believe he's one of the most charming characters in film history. The entrance he makes when he's just driving along talking with that truck hat on with the great John Carpenter music. But he's just wonderful. From the moment the film starts, you're invested. You don't know where he's come from. You don't know anything about him, but you love him.
So charming. Such a charming motherfucker. Also, it's worth noting, he is wearing probably one of the most hideous haircuts known to mankind. So he's got a full-on mullet. He is wearing a white kind of printed vest top tucked in to acid-wash blue jeans with some knee-high boots.
It's a good look.
It's good.
It's a solid look.
Yeah.
I'll let him off because he is just so likable. So likable.
I read something the other day that apparently Zach Braff, that absolute wuss from Scrubs, he went to a Halloween party once that Kate Hudson was throwing, who is, of course, Dad's stepdaughter. We're his natural born children, but she's not.
Of course, by blood.
So he went dressed as Jack Burton, Zach Braff, and then ran into Kurt, which would be fairly odd, wouldn't it? Like, yeah, I've come as you. That's slightly disconcerting. I absolutely love the character of Jack Burton. And I think the thing that interests me the most or amuses me the most is he isn't this all-powerful hero. In films of this type, they're usually a stone-cold badass who gets everything right. But he's not. Jack Burton thinks that he's John Wayne. But in reality, he's a bumbling goof who's nowhere near as suave as he thinks he is. The perfect example is the big fight scene near the end during the wedding, and he shoots the gun off and knocks out some masonry from the ceiling, which knocks him out. So he's lying on the floor unconscious for the first bit of the fight. And John Carpenter himself put it best when he said that the film is really about a sidekick who thinks he's the leading man. Wang is the real hero of the film. He's the competent one who knows what he's doing. He's the one who kicks ass. Jack's just his assistant who's along for the ride. I love that.
I like that's that a lot. Awesome. He's just so... I just love him. And I know you just said about his comment on his dress appearance. I think no one else in the world would pull that off.
Mm. No,
that
exactly.
That vest is so iconic. He looks... I'm sorry, I'm going to grow my hair like his in that film. I wanted to go... I want to be Jack Burton.
Pixar, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, in the next 6 months, I'm going to slowly grow it out. But he's... He's hilarious. And is that a film with so many good one-liners?
Oh, it's amazing.
True.
Let's be honest. I'm not going to start doing them now because they're all the way through this episode. Let's talk about other characters. Let's talk about Lo Pan because he's a good baddie.
He's like a pantomime villain. He look like he's got the full on makeup. He has the presence. It's quite a camp performance.
Yeah.
It's really like balls to the wall. Like, I do not give a shit what people think about me. I am just going to enjoy every second I'm on screen. And he really does. He proper like mean mugs the camera, but I'll forgive him for it because not only is he really funny to watch, but he is straight up terrifying.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a stereotypical Chinese villain, Fu Manchu type character. But James Hong, who plays David Lo Pan, also played Hannibal Chu in Blade Runner, you know, a couple of years before. And even back then, in the early to mid-80s, he looked 100. But he's still acting now. He's actually 89 now.
And
he pops up in TV shows all the time. He's been in recent episodes of The Blacklist, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think he was just born old. he's looked the same age ever since I've ever seen him, which is really fucking old.
Born like a testicle.
Yeah.
Like really wrinkly. And
old
really...
Chinese testicle.
That's Chinese testicles. But what about the special effects for him? Because I think for an 80s film, the effects look bloody good.
Yeah.
Come on, John Carpenter knows what he's doing. And this, again, was a low budget.
Yeah, there's a bit when he's in kind of the old man body and his head starts to glow and kind of go see-through. That effect is brilliant.
It is.
Mm-hmm. For what, when was this, 86 or something?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's tremendous. But it's classic Carpenter. He's so good at practical effects. Like, think about that weird eyeball monster.
Yeah.
How cool does that look?
That looks better than the monster that's in Star Wars Episode 7, those big meatballs that follow the people.
Yeah.
This is a smaller down version. It's as if that meatball in Star Wars had sex with Krang out of Turtles and made this mini monster, and it looks ace. It doesn't look stupid because, again, practical effects.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved you said earlier, Gemma, is that Carpenter at this point had done stuff like The Fog, he'd done The Thing, he'd done Halloween. To step out of that and go out of his comfort zone and still make something so charming and so funny, so well, that needs praise, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I ask a question? Does anybody know if Mortal Kombat was influenced by this film?
Absolutely, it was, yeah.
Raiden,
Shang Tsung, Liu Kang, Johnny Cage, Sonya Blade, so many characters.
The first two, Raiden and Shang Tsung, certainly. Shang Tsung is based somewhat on David Lo Pan, and Raiden is absolutely based on Lightning, one of the three storms. Yeah.
But I saw Liu Kang with the character of Wang Chi, Johnny Cage is clearly Jack Burton, and Sonya is Gracie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see all of that.
I mean, despite her being this kind of damsel in distress kind of character, she still kicked ass when needed to be. And you know what? Credit to Kim Cattrall. I loved her as Gracie.
I loved her too, and you kind of forget how many fun films she was in the 80s. She was in this, Mannequin, Police Academy, Porky's.
Love Mannequin.
Yeah, Mannequin's cool. Oh. She was in
Porky's,
yeah.
I forgot about that.
You wouldn't get away with that these days, would you?
No, that's a great film.
Oh, Christ. But yeah, she's a great actress. She's got such a low-key appeal. She doesn't scream and shout. She's always sort of self-confident. And.
But I find her presence. She has a really striking presence.
Mm.
Like, you see her on screen, and you take notice. She commands that screen.
And has great chemistry with Kurt Russell as well.
Sizzling!
I wish they were in more scenes together. Because if you think on it, then they're maybe in, what, five, six scenes?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
And then when they finally get it on, he's got that lipstick on. It's just so good.
Even
so
when he's kicking ass too, still the little geisha red lipstick.
We all need some lipstick now and then.
Let's talk about the music for a second. So,
oh my God.
As is always the case, John Carpenter tends to do his own music for his films. And he's known for a bit of kind of synth synth
just a
wave.
Bit.
Yeah. And this one, I like, there's a bit of a rock and roll element to it. He could have done stereotypical Chinese music. It could have been
ding.
Yeah. But it's not. It's Carpenter synth rock, and it's so good.
It is. I've got it on vinyl, and it genuinely is one that you'll listen to all the way through. It's nothing else is like it. It isn't. For that time, he sat there and he went, right, I can't be asked to get other people to do it. I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
And he does it time and time again. And he nails it. And I can't wait. I think he might be doing it on the new Halloween film. I'm sure he's invested in something. I'm hoping. And he's never lost that.
And it's in the moment of that time of the mid-80s. I listen back to it now, especially when I was doing the rewatch. And it's so nostalgic, but it gives me all nice, warm, nostalgic feels to it. It's so of the time. You would never get a score like this in any film of today.
No.
Nothing
like
that.
Which is a shame.
I know. We need more nostalgia.
The main intro. So good. I love it.
It just made me think of something with the intro, and you know he's got the pork chop express thing on the side of the car. I only noticed watching it for the second time that at the front of the car it says hauling ass, and then there's like a silhouette of a woman hauling ass. It's amazing to me that this film was a financial flop.
I'm gobsmacked.
It only took 11 million at the US box office off a 25 million budget, which is astounding, isn't it? Apparently, you know, it's clearly a good film. Everyone knows it's a good film. They just didn't know how to market it.
To be fair, if you didn't know anything about John Carpenter and you try and explain it, it's not an easy one, is it?
No.
So there's this really good character whose girlfriend, his best mate's girlfriend, gets kidnapped. And if he doesn't, there's an ancient curse. It is mental. Yeah. It is actually mental.
Yeah.
But it's like a crossover between Western civilization and Chinese culture.
Mm.
Have we seen a film like that before then?
I think the problem is that there was a film like that around the same time, The Golden Child, starring Eddie Murphy.
Okay.
So one of the reasons why it was so difficult to promote this is because The Golden Child was in production for... Have you seen The Golden Child, by the way?
Oh, a long time ago.
No.
Have you never seen The Golden Child?
What?
Oh, shit, man. Yeah, that's a good film. But there are similar themes to it. And that was already in production when this was rushed into production. They rushed this one out first. But because the studio didn't understand it, they kind of just let it die. And then that one came out.
What a
shame. Yeah, they didn't really know how to promote a film where the main character is basically a sidekick and most of the other characters are Asian. They just didn't see a market for it. Which clearly, time has told, there was a market for it because it's one of the biggest cult successes of all time.
He must be a bit annoyed because he did it with The Thing, he did it with this.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? He's like, what's the point in releasing films in the cinema? Because he needs 10 years for his films to grow.
Yeah.
Well, it must be frustrating.
But doesn't that say a lot that John Carpenter was way ahead of his time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was that much
Look at They Live.
Yeah, but he was that much of a pioneer that at the time people didn't get it. And that's a real shame.
And the thing is, this film was set up for a sequel, wasn't it? Because
Jack,
the happy ending would be Jack staying with Gracie, but he's like, no, I'm going to ride the roads. He gets into his truck, and then you see that weird orangutan monster thing at the back of his truck.
I love that monster.
Like, Chewbacca on crack.
Yeah, so they were clearly setting up a second film, but because it died on its arse, we never got one.
My favourite thing about this whole film... are the fight scenes.
Oh, my
the
Lord.
The gravity-defying, impossible fight scenes that are just so elaborate and they're so out of this world that what you would expect for kung fu scenes to be. You've got flying that happens where you throw a punch and they're still flying 10 seconds later. You've got acrobats, you've got crazy stunts, and you've got some really impressive martial arts, especially towards the beginning with the whole gang fight. I loved every single second they were starting to fight.
The fight scene in the alley is actually really well filmed.
It's
like,
superb.
We joke, but for the budget and everything, he's got such a good vision. Because fight scenes, as we know, I don't think Christopher Nolan ever does a good fight scene. They're too... When Batman's fighting Bane, it's so badly done. But other stuff he does is amazing. And that's one of the best filmmakers in the world. John Carpenter nailed that. And he did it, like we said again, in...
They Live.
He's good at it.
Yeah.
I noticed when I was watching the alley fight scene, you're not just watching the two main characters in front of the screen, you're watching behind them too. Everybody's getting involved.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Some of it is so daft though, but in a good way.
It.
So like when the three storms first start fighting, how they kind of, they sort of flip their little knives up into their hand and then they do this lean back thing for no apparent reason and then launch into a front flip. It's like, the amount of energy you're wasting, just throw your fucking knife. But it's daft, but fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring it down now.
Oh, no.
The tone's going to go down.
Oh, no.
Because there's a topic that I saw a lot of people commenting on our social media feeds.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's dead and I don't know if it's alive.
Right.
But what are your thoughts on The Rock starring as Jack Burton in the remake, which is pencilled but not quite official but could be?
Well, then erase it if it's pencilled.
Yeah, that's what rubbers
it's,
are for.
It's mad.
Yeah, I think it was about 2 years ago it was first announced, and I've not really heard anything about it since. don't do it. There's no need for it. I love Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and he's a charming motherfucker, as is Kurt Russell, but the film exists. The film isn't that old. If it was some obscure Italian film from 1923 that no one had seen, then fine, remake it. But it's a film that's only 30-odd years old. 32 years old, that people love. They love the main character. All you can ever do is an inferior version, so why do it?
Also, with the special effects, because they do have this beautiful, charming nostalgia about them, in the 80s version, you know for a fact this remake is going to be so polished and so CGI'd, it's going to be seamless. No, we like a little stank with our special effects. Leave it alone.
Exactly. And then instead of having the little Chinese fella Wang, you'd have Rebel Wilson.
And do we really need Lopan having the people's elbow? Like, that's... You know he would. Yeah. It would be ridiculous. Can you smell what Jack Burton's cooking? It'd just be shit.
I would rather have a Kanye.
Kanye.
Yeah.
Where do we go from that?
Even though I've just tarnished it, I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
And if either of you didn't like it, I genuinely would have gone home quite upset.
You would have roundhoused us in the face.
Massively. Should we score it?
Yeah.
Ben?
It's not perfect, but it's delightful. 9 out of 10.
Love it. Gemma?
9 out of 10 for me too.
It's 10 for me. It is perfect. It's an absolute masterpiece. But overall, that's damn good. Big Trouble in Little China gets a skip to the end. 9 out of 10.
Lovely.
I was just about to hit the space bar and cancel the recording, but we've got another rewatch to announce.
We do. It's my turn. This one is going to be a big one. We've got episode 99 on the next one, fellas.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. So, I've picked this film because it's a genre that I'm not really familiar with and I don't really watch a lot of films with. So this is kind of a little gift to me, but it's also a gift to you guys. Ben, on the next episode, on the review, you're going to be sacrificing a lot because it's a film you're not used to either.
Oh.
And Mark, I know for a fact you're going to love this film.
What a build-up.
On the next episode, our rewatch is going to be The Good, The Bad and The Ugly.
Yes!
Here's to the Army and Navy and the battles they have won. Here's to America's colors, the colors that never run.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
Okay, guys, it's the third and final round of Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Nervous.
Yeah.
You both look like you are sweating it.
Because it's harder than you think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on the spot. But I see listeners going, ah, you didn't know this. Like on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You go and sit in that seat facing Chris Tarrant. It ain't as easy.
But it's Clarkson now, isn't it?
Yeah. Even more worrying.
Shame.
And today, it's myself.
Well, it's scary.
I know. I've got to look at this face every day. How do you think I feel? But enough about the shenanigans. We need to talk about what's going to happen in this game show. We've got Mark versus Ben. Basically, I'm going to be giving them 10 films. I've also got a tiebreaker up my sleeve. That's just in case they score equally. But what they have to do is I'm going to give a film. They've got to give me the actor or actress who stars in that film, but they have to get that position as low as possible on the IMDb webpage. So it's going to be in credit order.
That's tough.
So we're looking for the most obscure person on the credits.
Kind of like pointless, but not pointless, because they would sue our asses. But yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you get the lowest one, you get the point. If you get higher, you lose that point.
Interesting.
Mm. Yeah?
I'm acting like I've not, you know, we've run
this. I know. This is new. Wow.
We've done this 3 times, boys. Wow. I mean, we should be used to this.
Okay.
So let's cut the crap. Let's get to the chase. Are you ready?
Yes.
Who wants to go first?
Ben can.
You sure? Ben, do you want to go first?
Why not?
Okay. Right. The game is beginning. Your first film. Jackie Brown.
Bridget Fonda.
Okay. Mark.
Samuel L. Jackson.
I can now reveal. Ben gets the point. Well done. Yes. Bridget Fonda is 2 below Samuel
L.
Jackson.
Is that it? That's not bad. I thought that was going to be way below.
Only 2.
Crikey.
But what a cracking start.
You know when you just want to throw in the white towel? It's like, there you go. On that first one.
Your second film. So, Mark, you're going to get first dibs on this, right, mate?
Definitely going to win this.
Okay. Your second film. Dodgeball, a true underdog story.
Fucking hell.
There's a lot of people in there.
It's Vince Vaughn in it. It probably is.
Is that your guess?
Just looking by Ben's eyes, the way he's looking at me.
Don't look at him, mate. Look at me.
I've only seen that film once. It was good.
What?
Why?
Madness.
Who are you?
Have you not learned on this episode I don't watch films?
Mark lies.
Yes.
Is it your final answer?
Fuck it, yeah.
Yeah, Ben.
Jason Bateman.
Ben gets the point.
Woo! Was he in it?
Yeah, he's the star of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's all right then.
He was Pepper Brooks.
Oh, cool.
Vince Vaughn was the star. He was top billing.
Right, that's all right then. So 2-0.
2-0.
So I'm doing this to build up the listeners, you know, that anticipation.
You're going to get it to 5-0 and then the fight back is on.
Yeah. See, if that really happens now, they're going to think we fixed it. Because that's definitely going to happen.
Your third film, Ben, are you ready?
Yes.
Ocean's 11.
Don Cheadle.
Mark.
I've not seen it.
But you know he's in it.
I'm going to go with... I don't know if he's in it. I think he should be. Matt Damon.
Ben gets the point.
Sorry, it's all part of the plan. 3-0. Yeah, right, yeah, just two more until I start playing.
Building it up.
Yep. I honestly don't want to whitewash. Let me have 1 point. I'll buy you a beer after the recording.
Not letting you go on.
Fuck you. Come on, dude.
Okay, Mark. Your fourth film. Sin City.
Jessica Alba.
Ben.
Powers Booth.
Bastard.
Ben gets the point.
Yes.
So, for an update, for those of you who are trying to keep count, Mark has 0 and Ben has 4, but we are only 4 films deep.
Watch, it's just about one more, then it's going to happen.
Building up to the big swerve.
Of not gaining points.
She laughs and then forgets that, you know, there's going to be a game when I'm games master. I don't forget.
Screwed me over so many times, it's okay. Right, Mark, I believe in you, buddy. You can do this.
Oh, now you like me.
Ben, so, the fifth film. Boogie Nights.
Nina Hartley.
Swat.
Mark.
Julianne Moore.
Oh, bless.
It's all part of the plan.
It Pete is. Paul, Ben okay. got it. Okay, so Ben's got this one. So I believe you. I believe He's it's good. Part of the plan.
It wasn't this good against you. Or is it that you were all right?
This is it. The fight is on. 5-0. Yeah, cool, here we go now. This is the real quiz.
This is it. Fuck it now.
Okay, so... Mark, film number 6. Star Trek. The 2009 version.
My mind has gone blank and I'm now going to... The listeners are probably going to work out that it's not part of the game to go 5-0 down. Simon Pegg.
Okay. Ben.
Bruce Greenwood.
Mark's got the point!
Yes! What?
Mark's got the point.
How so? He is, you know. He's 3 places above.
Well, yes!
Holy moly, I didn't see that one coming. The fight back is on! It's awful.
He wasn't messing around. I feel stupid for underestimating him. Film 7, said Ben. Your film is Inception.
Oh, fuck. I'm struggling. There's a couple I can think of, but I can't remember the damn name. So I'm going to go with Marion Cotillard.
Okay. Mark.
Ellen Page.
Ben gets a point.
Yes!
You shit yourself a little
suck
bit.
Suck it.
Didn't you suck a little? You sucked yourself. No. You shit yourself
a bit. I did
a bit.
Yeah.
So, I'm not even playing and I'm already sweaty, but you guys, the score at the moment is Mark has 1 and Ben has 6.
Okay, so I've lost.
Definitely lost.
But I'm playing for pride now.
You are playing for pride, yeah. And buddy, you can get
6-4 would be quite nice. It'd be like, oh, we nearly did it.
In respect.
If there was only 12 questions, he might have won.
I aspire to nearly win.
Come on then.
Okay, so, Mark, the 8th film, Hot Fuzz.
Bill Bailey.
Okay. Ben.
Reese Shearsmith. Oh, fuck. No, he's not. I'm thinking of fucking Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, man. Mark's got the point.
Yeah.
Well done.
It means fuck all now, but I'm proud.
I'm afraid Reese Shearsmith was not in the
first. I know. Yeah, it was Shaun of the Dead.
Sorry.
Oh, a handful of dart.
Okay, so we are nearing the end of the game, but we're on film number 9. Ben, your film? Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
This is the screw job. You picked his favourite film. You fucking better pick mine as number 10, Mac and Me.
Catherine Hahn.
Okay. Mark.
I'm going to make up a name and hope that they're in it.
Okay.
John Edwards.
He's really good, him.
Ben gets the point.
Imagine. What's that, 8?
Ben has
7-2.
5-6-7-2. Yeah, so 7-2, Ben. So we're on number 10. Almost Famous.
Okay, that's good of you. You haven't completely screwed me over.
I'm nice.
Because I need a wee, I'm going to rush it, my decision, all right? Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Okay. Ben.
Mark Maron.
Ben's got the point.
Yeah.
You know, you're just defeated, you might as well just let yourself get caned in. Should we have the tiebreaker anyway?
Do you want a tiebreaker?
That's the real quiz. Yeah.
Do you want to do Dublin quits? Do you want to risk it?
Definitely
just
not.
Just for the listeners?
No. Oh. It wouldn't be for them, it'd be for you.
Come on then.
So what was the actual score there?
The actual score, Ben had 8 points and Mark had a valiant 2 points.
Ooh. Close.
You did good, buddy.
So close.
You did good. I will tell you what, I've got the tiebreaker anyway.
Cool.
So your tiebreaker, this is a real quiz. Movie 43.
Christ on a bike.
I've not even seen it.
But everyone is in it.
Who's going first?
Let's go champion.
Okay. Steve Merchant, I think, is in it.
Okay.
I haven't seen it, so...
Just say a name. John Edwards, I'm sure, is in there somewhere.
Stifler.
You've got to say his real name.
Sean William Scott.
Well done.
He probably is in it.
Imagine that. Ben actually gets the point.
And
wait, plot twist. Stifler was in it.
Ah! But I still got the point.
4 places above.
Oh, so close.
That's a good thing, isn't it? I knock him every week, but fair play to him.
Yeah.
Is that the height of his career?
Yeah. So what was the final score? 8-2.
8-2, and it means that Cast and Furious Tokyo Drift belongs to Ben. Well done.
Mm-hmm. It's just the way it goes, isn't it?
I need to move on. Let's talk about the next quiz.
Well, I've got something a little special for episode 99.
Go on.
Now, way back when, on episode 50, to celebrate our half century, me, Mark and Adam did a quiz called Quiz to the End. And it's where we all came with questions about things that we each had said or done in regards to those first 50 episodes.
Okay.
And to celebrate episode 99, we're going to do the exact same thing again. So me, Mark and Gemma are all going to come with a set of questions about our own things that we've said or done on the podcast, and whoever knows the podcast best wins. And I've got a feeling, Mark, that old Gemmapedia over here is going to win.
Gemmapedia, that's the worst nickname.
Because we've got dog shit memories, but she's like an old school fan who's been writing notes in her diary and all that.
Are we going to end this competition where she won a place in the podcast because she was such a big fan? Or
you're
she gonna
so
stay?
Mean.
That's going to be good. Yeah. Are you going to give him the name?
Well, the name, as I said last time in episode 50, it was called Quiz to the End. And the new version is going to be called Quiz to the End. The
Corey.
The number two, like Corey.
Like what
Angelic
you did there.
To the core. Or yes. Hashtag kids too. All those sorts of things.
Skip
but also
fun.
Because it's the second time we're doing it.
Aww.
So next time around, episode 99, Quiz to the End.
Okay. You people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. And if we're not back by dawn, call the president.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend. It's that point of the show where we give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now and we want you to enjoy it too. I love this part of the show.
It's my favourite.
Not only because we get to wax lyrical about things that aren't movies necessarily, but because we get to hear what the public think also.
Yeah.
And we end up just getting great ideas and spending loads of money.
I'm skint as well, and sometimes that's tough because I'm like, oh, I love that book, and I go online, it's 40 quid. I'm like, I need it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Not good.
It's killing me. But what have you got this week, Mark?
I've got a documentary I watched on Netflix called Making Fun, which is all about Funko. I've not just done this to help them, guys. Yeah. I've genuinely not. I watched it about 2 weeks ago when it first came out, and I watched it again this weekend with our good friend Scott. He came over, he's a big collector. I was like, let's watch this. But it's the history about the company. And you might go, what, it's just toys. But to see how far they've come and their love for their fans is mind-blowing.
Mm.
But not just that, because, okay, we know they're these bobbleheads that then became pops and they sell all over the world. They got licensing for all these different companies and we get all these great wrestling ones and all that. But the appearances on this documentary are worth it alone. So we get Zack Ryder, who is a WWE star.
Woo, woo, woo.
And his toy collection, because we don't just see the Funkos, is unbelievable. He is a child. There's no denying that he is literally a child. But just watch this documentary, because he's got the greatest set of Ghostbusters figures. He's got the greatest set of He-Man figures. He's got all the old school original 80s wrestling figures.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a tour of his home. And you think, that is amazing. No one is going to top this. And then we get Kirk from Metallica. And this guy goes, hold my beer. He's got like a cellar room in his house. And when I say a room, I mean it's bigger than most supermarkets because he's a multi-millionaire.
Yeah.
And this guy's collection is unbelievable. And they go to his house and he's there going, he doesn't just go, I want to play a solo. He actually talks all about his love for toys and growing up. And he's so happy. He's like a kid on Christmas Day because he's got his own official Funko of himself. And he pulls it out and he's like, look, it's just like me. He's not Michael Jackson.
I was about to say.
And it's phenomenal because you see this adult who must be nearly 50 now. He's probably older.
Yeah.
Who's in Metallica, who plays metal, who's probably more happy than any number one he's ever had from having this little figure. And that's the reason to watch this documentary. But also their love for their fans. And Ben's going to get angry now and smash the place up. But Kevin Smith makes an appearance. And he's good. He's genuinely talking about how the fans are so obsessed. And they're like this big unit. And they are like a big family. And the way that they tour and show you around the offices will make you so jealous of anyone that works there. Because the offices are a big playroom. Mm-hmm. They have what they want. They have these chill out areas. The place looks like a dreamland you'd have loved to have gone to as a child, and these adults get to work there every day. And the day after when I went to work, I was looking at the wall going, I'd love to make this like a cave or like a snow effect like Star Wars, and these guys get to do that shit. And we don't. We have boring offices that suck. But honestly...
Suck it!
What?
But it's great. It shows you that these guys earned it, and they did.
Yeah.
They are so big now. They're out there. Everyone buys Funkos, but they deserved it. They did it from their own bedroom. They went to a Comic-Con, and people were buying these stuff, and they were doing it from their own bloody garages. And look at it now. Multi-billion pound organisation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's awesome. And you know when you watch a documentary, and at the end, you know they deserve it, and you're kind of rooting for them. Mm. But it's a happy ending. You see... They are still in the office every day. They've not gone and earned all this money and gone, fuck the staff. They go in, they high-five each other every morning.
Yeah.
There's vending machines with free food. They're always celebrating. But it's quite depressing because my job's shit. And I want to work at Funko.
Yeah.
But it's really good. And it's about an hour and a half. And it's on Netflix right now. And that's what I want to do. I want to pick stuff that people can access, not stuff that's hard to find, like Snowpiercer.
Yeah.
But it's really good fun. And I hope you both watch it soon.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it alongside that. Is it The Toys That Made Us?
Yeah.
I want to watch all of them on one weekend.
Yeah, and then go to a charity shop and spend hundreds of pounds on buying all the original figures.
Yeah.
It's so good, dude. It's so, so much fun.
I'll check that out. So you've not seen it either yet, Gemma?
Me neither, no. But I'm doing exactly what you're doing. I need to watch The Toys That Made Us too.
Yeah. Excellent.
And then you'll ring your parents and go, Mom, have I still got that Skeletor? No, I threw it out. You idiot, it's worth £500! Yeah. We never grew up, do we, as kids?
Nah, shouldn't have to.
Amazing.
Gemma, what's your pick?
I've gone for a comedy podcast.
Ooh.
It's called the Beef and Dairy Network Podcast.
Even the name is funny.
And it recently won the Best Comedy Podcast at the British Podcast Awards this year.
We were robbed.
Vote.
Fix that one.
It's from comedian Benjamin Partridge. Aha! And they're a series of 10 to 30 minute episodes. I believe they used to release them every month. So I'm sort of doing the back catalogue at the moment. And it prides itself on being the number one podcast for those involved or just interested in the production of beef animals and dairy herds.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I bloody am.
I am.
It's a podcast that makes me cackle very, very loudly. And it also has guest appearances from comedians such as Kevin Eldon, Greg Davis, Ed Gamble, Miles Jupp.
Nice.
And when I first listened to this, it made me think of comedy greats like The Day Today, Amando Iannucci, other Chris Morris projects such as Brass Eye too. There's episodes where it's just straight up comedy. They're taking the piss out of, you know, making beef a very serious subject. But it also veers along the absolute absurd and weird, like weird episodes where they almost go on a tangent. There's a running theme throughout the whole podcast. It's called The Fifth Meat. So you've got your chicken, you've got your lamb, you've got your beef, you've got your pork, but there is an elusive fifth meat. I feel very bad for talking about this because I have a feeling I might get shot and murdered. I know, right? But throughout the whole podcast, it alludes to this mystery surrounding this fifth meat. And the episodes where it does concentrate on that are just absolutely wacky. They're silly, they're stupid, but my God, they're so much fun.
Isn't it fish?
Well, it's not necessarily a meat.
It could be like League of Gentlemen, you know, the special stuff.
You know what? That's exactly what it reminds me of.
Yeah, the special stuff.
And there is just this weird surrealness about the whole podcast. There's also a really weird and crazy character called Eli Roberts, and he's a Welsh slaughterhouse owner who brushes off concerns about not being health and safety certified and not thinking of his employees' well-being for killing cows every day. But he almost has this kind of arc throughout the whole podcast. There's even so much so, I think there's 3 episodes focusing on him solely. But it's just, it's fun. It's silly. It's stupid. It's 10 minutes, 30 minutes of just switching off from the world and just having a bloody good laugh. Highly recommended.
What's the name again?
The Beef and Dairy Network Podcast.
Love the name.
And it opens up with, you know, you hear most of these podcasts and they usually have, you know, adverts like, for 10% off, quote this podcast name. And it has a mock one every single episode. It's so funny.
That sounds good.
Sounds very interesting. Yeah. Very fucking weird.
Yeah.
So remember, subscribe, listen, and most importantly, as they sign off on every episode, beef out.
Oh.
Shall we steal that? Shall we say that at the end of our show now? Yeah.
What have you got then, dude?
I've got a book by a chap called Reed Tucker, and it's called Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC. And it documents the long-standing and currently ongoing war between the two biggest names in comics. It starts with DC becoming a powerhouse in the 1950s, of course, with characters like Batman and Superman dominating the newsstands, through then to Marvel's ascendancy in the 60s, when Stan Lee and all those guys came up with the likes of the Fantastic Four, Iron Man and Thor. It then chronicles the 50 years since that, 50 years plus, the back and forth, the successes, the ups and downs, the failures, the successes, and the verbal sparring between the company's owners, editors and staff, the poaching of talent and all the various bad ideas from both companies that nearly crippled the whole industry, all in pursuit of besting their rivals. The book only came out last year, so it's really up to date as well. So it includes the rivalry on the big screen, which obviously we know Marvel is winning quite handily. But it also looks about how these once independent comic book manufacturers are now small cogs in bigger machines because, of course, Marvel is now part of Disney. DC, a few years back, became part of Warner Brothers. So they're not independent. They don't have their own... they can't determine their own fates anymore. They're at the whims of these behemoths now, who are, of course, only caring about profit, not about art. So it looks at that and which of the companies is succeeding better. And it's an amazing look, actually. It's an amazing look at how personality clashes and petty squabbles can overtake good business and logical decisions. A lot of it is dick-measuring competitions. That's what it's just idiot men, immature men, flopping their knobs out and saying mine's bigger than yours. That's really what it is, and that's why the companies are in the state they're in. It's a great read, though, because this guy Tucker, who wrote it, he's an entertainment journalist, and he's written for all sort of US publications like Esquire and USA Today. And he's got a really informative but informal style that makes the book as fun as it is fascinating. And it's quite good because all through the book, he's clearly impartial. He talks about DC in the same breath he talks about Marvel. He doesn't take one side or the other until he gets to the movies, and he just doesn't hold back. He clearly thinks the DC movies are wank and the Marvel movies are great. And that's the only time he sort of breaks character and becomes partial either way. But it's a fantastic book, and it's a must-read for comic book fans. If you care about the history of DC and Marvel, read it. But really, anyone who has an interest in how entertainment businesses run, it's a fascinating read. Even if you don't care about comics per se, how cogs in a machine operate and how rivalries form and thrive and die and wither, it's a fascinating, fascinating read. I read it in something like 3 days. I couldn't put it down.
That'll take me 3 months. But sometimes I don't want to know the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, because it's like this big, like, in my head, it's like Willy Wonka's factory. Everything's all happening. Let's make a Batman film. But to know it's so fucking up its own arse, I'm quite intrigued now, dude.
Yeah. I get what you mean. Sometimes you don't want to know how the sausage is made, because it kind of ruins the mystique. But there are certain things like, I never knew that Stan Lee went over and did a run of comics at DC. They kind of poached him, and it was like their big get. We've got Stan Lee working at DC. And he did this bunch of really forgettable comics that DC basically have tried to bury. But it's all stuff like that, where they were nicking each other's talent and one-upping each other and all this kind of stuff. And it's petty. It's petty bullshit, most of it, but it's fascinating. Fascinating stuff.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like mix again. Podcast, book, and a documentary.
Indeed. We bloody do it all. Great. We do
lovely
it all.
Stuff.
Do you want to hear what the listeners have got?
Yes.
They've always got some bloody good stuff.
They have. We've taken them on board, haven't we?
My bank balance, though.
Tell me about it. On Instagram, Zoe Owen, at Zoe Ann Oscar, has said, a bit late to the party, but A Handmaid's Tale on Channel 4. So interesting and different, I am hooked.
Love this so much.
Have you been watching season 2?
I have been. I'm 2 episodes in at the moment, and I feel like you've really got to get your headspace in the right headspace to watch it. But 2 episodes in the new season, it's spectacular.
I don't think you've seen it, have you, Mark?
Nope.
Why?
You want to get? It's the sort of thing, based on when you talk about the sort of things you watch with your wife, it's the sort of thing I think your wife would enjoy. Yeah. You should get on it together. When I watched season 1, I ended up binging it after the season ended, and I'm doing the same. I've stored all the episodes of season 2. When it gets to the end, I'm going to binge them. But I love season 1.
It's remarkable.
On Twitter, Alex Orlando, at Alex Orlando, has said, I just read Jay Chandrasekhar's book, Mustache Shenanigans, and it had both fantastic stories from his life as well as hilarious behind-the-scenes snippets from all the Broken Lizard movies.
Yay.
It was awesome.
I love him so much. I'm a huge Broken Lizard fan.
So I'm guessing you're a big fan of Super Troopers.
Yes, Beer Fest is an amazing film, and Super Troopers 2 should be out in a few weeks.
I think it might have been and gone already, but it's around now in the UK anyway. Have you seen any of the Broken Lizard movies, Super Troopers and so
Club
on?
Dread. Club Dread too.
I need
Club
to see these.
Terrible. It's dog shit. Super Troopers is good. Beer Fest is funny.
Oh, I've seen Beer Fest. Yeah, that was good. Silly.
And Jay Chandrasekhar now, his career really is a sitcom director. He's directed loads of episodes of Community, mm-hmm. New Girl, The Goldbergs, all sorts of stuff. So I'd be interested in reading that. That'd be a good book.
Yeah, me too.
On Facebook, Christopher Griffiths has said, Nick Cave live at the All Points East Festival in London.
That is a hot ticket to have.
Yes, definitely.
And Christopher also posted on Facebook a picture of himself, clearly about 2 rows from the front, so you can see him mugging with Nick Cave on stage behind him. It was an amazing photo.
That's awesome. I saw this. It's such a good photo. Best photo ever.
Everyone says he's absolutely phenomenal live. Yeah.
I'm a huge Nick Cave fan.
Yeah. It's been going so long, hasn't it? What, 20, 25 years?
Oh, yeah. It was, early 90s. And even, I remember one of the best albums he did a collaboration with loads of other artists called Murder Ballads.
Ooh.
Stunning. Absolutely stunning album.
Fair play.
And the theme tune to Peaky Blinders is him, isn't
Red Right Hand.
Great song. Mm-hmm. Love that. On Twitter, Erica at Survey Babe has said, the movie Safety Not Guaranteed, written and starring Mark Duplass with Aubrey Plaza. Love that movie. An amazing soundtrack.
I saw that years
Me
ago.
Me too. Yeah. It is a good movie.
Yeah, it was all right. I only watched it once, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah. And hello, Aubrey Plaza.
Always
amazing.
She's
unbelievable. Yeah.
I love those low-key mumblecore type movies, and Mark Duplass is one of the kings of that. Really good film. Mm. On Instagram, Ben Davis at Suavis91, The Gates of Janus, a book exploring the minds of serial killers written by Ian Brady. If you have a strong stomach or mind, then it's an interesting read. So that's Ian Brady, as in the Moors murderer, Ian Brady, who killed 5 kids in the 60s along with Myra Hindley. And
fucking
he's written
hell.
A book. Fucking hell.
I think I'm all right on that. I won't sleep.
I mean, I love true crime, but I think that might be a pinch too much for me.
I want to read it. Do you remember, I think it was last episode or maybe the one before, someone recommended a book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark about the East Area Rapist?
Yes, that is the best true crime book I've ever read.
I've got about 100 pages left, I think. I'm
How are you
nailing
finding it?
I love it. It's so good.
Isn't it incredible? Yeah. Like, you can vividly imagine the situations that happened, but I found that she had so much empathy for the victims.
Yeah.
She name-checked every single one.
Yeah, yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's a fantastic book. But yeah, I think I will check out that Ian Brady one because that's some dark shit.
Yeah. Ben, on the next episode, just silent. That was bad.
On Twitter, Lorna at Foxy Snob has said, The Staircase on Netflix. If you liked Making a Murderer, you'll love this. I watched it a while back and I'm planning a rewatch. Have any of you watched this one yet?
No.
I bet you haven't, you Pooch.
I've just started it.
Yeah.
My God, the first episode does not hold back.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Thing is, the documentary, The Staircase, it was originally made in 2004.
That's right.
It's about an American crime, but it was made by a French documentarian, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, they've added more and more to it. Yeah. Now, this version that's just come out on Netflix, I think there are 3 brand new episodes that sort of tell the tail end of the story. It's really interesting.
Even on the first episode, when you understand exactly the crime and what's happened, you can totally understand why there are so many episodes. It's such a complex case. Fuck, I don't even know where it's going to go, but it's
check that one out, Mark.
Crazy shit.
I'll add it to the list.
Yeah. On Facebook, Joe Myers, I have to give a shout out to Small Town Dicks, a true crime podcast hosted by actress Yardley Smith and Zibby Allen, along with twin brother detectives Dan and Dave. Each episode, they focus on a case Dan and or Dave worked. It's a must listen for true crime fans.
Subscribed. And Yardley Smith, that's Lisa Simpson.
That's Lisa Simpson, yeah.
Wow.
How weird. I wouldn't be able to take it seriously, because if her real voice sounds like Lisa...
I need to hear that now.
Yeah.
I'm down for that.
I'll check it out. On Twitter, Lindsay Liu at @B_my_deputy. Just finished reading Meddling Kids by Edgar Cantero. A great book loosely based on Scooby-Doo. Sounds weird, but it works.
Nice. I'll take her word for it.
Yeah, sounds good.
Scooby-Doo, Scooby-Poo. On Instagram, Drew White at Great White Bruce. Vikings. If you like men with big bushy beards wielding huge choppers, I know Gemma does, your quid's in. It's like an adult version of Game of Thrones.
You're talking to the target audience here.
Well, he says it's like an adult version of Game of Thrones, as if Game of Thrones is for kids.
It's mild.
Is that like for teachers?
Yeah. But I've wanted to watch this show for years. I think it's all on Amazon Prime in the UK, and I've never got around to watching it, but it's meant to be great. Have you guys watched any of Vikings?
Never.
I haven't got time, dude. It's too much of a commitment. There's loads of it. You know when you sometimes think someone recommends you, like, have you ever seen 24?
Yeah.
How many episodes are? 162. No, I can't. In that time, I can watch five other shorter series.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all about the time length with
but it's
you.
It's true, though. It's true.
I know, I get it. It's like our friend Chris has been for years trying to get me to watch The West Wing, and he's like, you'd love it. It's like, I'm sure I would. Yeah. But there's like eight seasons of 24 episodes. I ain't got the time.
No.
It's too big a commitment.
It is.
Yeah.
Forget that.
And then finally, on Twitter, Joey N. Housewares at Joey_Dollar has said, I just saw the new movie Hotel Artemis, and I have to recommend seeing it. It's got a solid cast and a cool premise. Check it out, because it will probably get overlooked with all the big summer movies coming out. Well, Joey, it's funny you should say that, because we're going to be reviewing it in a couple of episodes' time. Hasn't come out in the UK yet, but we're going to be checking that one out for sure.
Sweet! There's a little preview for you to juice you all up.
And then leave you dangling. If you want to send us your suggestions, you can get us on Twitter at STTEPodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or on email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast, but the end is rarely the end with us. The end is the beginning is the end, says Billy Corgan.
Smashing Pumpkins.
That's a great tune.
It is a good tune. As is The Beginning is the End is the Beginning, the other version.
By far.
Two good songs. But the last thing we want to talk about before we go away is, as we mentioned at the start, is Mark and I have been lucky enough to go to the Download Festival this past weekend. We are tired, still hungover.
Mark looks knackered.
And burnt to a fucking crisp. But it was fantastic, wasn't it, Mark?
It was bliss. We had 3 days of drinking, eating, watching great bands, meeting wrestlers, meeting bands, and being treated like VIPs, baby.
The VIPs that we are.
Yeah. It genuinely, each year, gets better and better. The weather helps, don't get me wrong. But I loved every minute of it, dude. When we came back on Sunday night, it was a bit emotional. It was like, that's a shame it's done. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I'm going to put you on the spot here, so do your best. What are your top three things of Download?
My God. So, for me, it was seeing Fright, because they don't come here often.
Yeah.
And I think they nailed their set. It wasn't the biggest crowd, but they just came on. None of this shit of trying to get the crowd to, you know, say, oi, when I say, oi, you say, oi. None of that crap.
Yeah.
They just went on, played 6 songs, nailed it, and went goodbye. And that's what you need to sometimes do. I was going to bring this as a skip to recommend, but I didn't know how to justify it as a band.
Yeah.
But Baroness were fucking unbelievable.
Mate.
And They probably were the best performance of the weekend. They came on, they're in a tent, there was probably about 3,000 people in this tent, and they just, again, rocked out, they looked the happiest band, they looked so grateful to be doing what they do. They've replaced their guitarist with a new girl who's just took to it like fish to water.
Yeah.
Well done, yes.
And they just hit it, and since I've been listening to their album, Purple, I've had that on in the car. And it's, you know, when you see a band live, it's weird. You can then go and listen to a CD and it sounds better than you remember because you just remember them on stage.
Yeah, I mean, I would have had Baroness in my top three as well. I won't now because you've picked
Sorry, dude.
No, it's great. It's great. It means I can talk about something else.
Yeah.
They were absolutely amazing. They were the band of the weekend for me. They absolutely nailed it. They sound flawless. The solos from the main guy, John Diabasley, and the new female guitarist, whose name I don't know, but she was absolutely amazing.
Yes.
They were so tight, so crisp. And like Mark says, big smiles on their faces because Baroness, they nearly died a few years back. They had a horrendous car crash near Bristol, like a bus crash.
Oh my God.
2 nights after I'd seen them live in Sheffield, and they were laid up in hospital for ages. A couple of the band members left because they couldn't really, you know, do the rigors of touring anymore. So you see John Baisley up front at the band smiling, and you just know it's because he nearly died. His life was nearly over, but he's back. He's writing music. He's rocking out at festivals and loving life.
Man. I'm trying to think of one more because there's so many to choose from. It's probably Guns N' Roses.
I thought you might say that. Yeah.
The original lineup, not all of them, but the fact that we had Axl and Slash.
And Duff.
And let's be honest, this is where I'm going to pass the mic to Ben. We fought and we were saying all day, they're probably going to come on about an hour and a half late.
Yeah.
Axl is known for being just an utter knobhead.
Yep.
Ben, how was Axl for you?
Well, but bearing in mind, I don't like Guns N' Roses. No. They're not my cup of tea at all. The fact that they'd been advertised to play a three and a half hour set, I'm thinking, that's too long, isn't it? That's ridiculous. He was amazing. He came on, what, bang on 7:20 when they were due to start?
Yep.
Came out all guns blazing, dancing his little fat self around the stage. His voice was fucking amazing. Songs that generally I don't like, that I find annoying really in real life, I was mesmerised. I said to Mark, right, 3.5 hour set, I'm staying for an hour tops, then I'm going to go have a pint. Ended up staying for 2 hours. I then left after that because my feet were hurting. but I came back for the encore, didn't I?
Yep.
So everything I saw, you know, Welcome to the Jungle and, you know, what are the great songs? Live and Let Die.
Everything.
November Rain.
Yeah, amazing. And they covered Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden.
What?
And it was a bit emotional. But Slash's guitar, to see him on stage just doing it. I know it sounds weird, but you kind of want him to fluff a note to show he's human.
Yeah.
He's a robot. He played 3.5 hours and you've never heard guitar sound so good. And every single solo was perfect. Perfection.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's flawed. I mean, it's self-indulgent.
Yeah.
His solos are about 4 hours long, but he's so good at it. You understand completely why he does it.
Yeah. So what's your top three then, dude?
Oh, good question. Number three, I would say probably because we, you know, we're top boys these days. We get press access. So getting to go backstage and meet some of the bands.
Yep.
So Mark, you met some of your heroes in Thrice.
Yep. Jamie Lemon.
Yeah. Jamie Lemon, another someone you're a big fan of. We met a lot of the wrestlers as well.
Yep.
We met WWE UK champion Pete Dunne. We were having a photo with him and I turned to him and said, that belt's amazing. He was like, do you want to hold it? Yep. So I was, in my mind, technically the WWE UK champion for a brief minute. We met Adam Cole, Bay-Bear.
Yep.
Who is also the introduction to this particular episode. You'll have heard that at the start of the show.
Very, very cool.
And we met Ricochet.
Amazing.
And of course the man Aleister Black. So meeting all those wrestlers and musicians backstage was cool as hell. I think number two was getting to experience bands that I wasn't that familiar with. A couple that would stood out for me were Hatebreed and I'm forgetting the
Parkway
name.
Parkway Drive.
Parkway Drive. And Parkway Drive have such a fucking emo sounding name, but they're far from that. And I wasn't really familiar with their stuff, and both sets absolutely blew me away. I thought they were fantastic. And how great was the sound quality for Parkway?
Unbelievable. Like, they are going to be going on to big things. I genuinely believe in the next 2 years they'll headline one of the Friday nights. They're just growing and growing. They just announced an arena tour, so it just shows how much they're growing. The crowd they just had in their hand from the moment they came on. And the band themselves said they didn't really enjoy it that much because it wasn't dark.
Yeah.
They have these like pyros going
stuff. Yeah, yeah, it was a bit because they were playing right in the bright sunlight. That was true. When we saw Marilyn Manson as well, we saw him in the sunlight. It was kind of like, that's not what you want to see Manson in. You want to see him in the dark.
I'm amazed he didn't melt.
Yeah. Oh, bloody hell, it was warm. And I guess my final one, I didn't think anything could have topped the Bronx and Baroness, both of whom were amazing, but Meshuggah, who were just this fucking nutty gent band from Sweden, were just insane. Just this wall of sound, the thick riffs just making the ground shake. I thought they were absolutely phenomenal. One of my favourite bands, been wanting to see them for years, and I finally got to do so, and they were brilliant.
And if you really like them and you want to think, Ben sounds like he's really into them, it's the Music Before Jurassic World's review. So there you go.
You put Meshuggah on the episode?
There
nice.
There you go. It's all bands that were at Download, so it's way too heavy.
But how great was it just to, you know, get to take part in all the VIP stuff?
It's amazing, isn't it, dude?
Yeah, you know, thanks to, is it Curtis and Libby?
Yeah, all the guys at LD Communications, they just absolutely nail it. Year on year, it gets better. And you think, how does this festival get better? It's so well organised. They just have this, it just works. They make sure they look after you. They make sure you know where you got to be. It's absolutely stunning. It is literally being treated like a god.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And we got the chance to hang out with cool people. We got to hang out with Darren and Donna and Scott and Sam and Steve. Just a great bunch of dudes.
It was awesome.
Having a lot of fun.
And now we're back in reality of...
back at work.
Yeah, it sucks.
Fuck me.
Gemma, what were your top three moments of Download? Well, I'll tell you what. You take the lead now and tell us what we got on the next episode.
That's a bloody good idea. So I'm going to kick things off with our rewatch. We're going for a Stone Cold classic. Now, I've never seen it. Mark, you've never seen it?
Never.
Oh, you lucky, lucky bastards.
But it's one of Ben's favourite films.
Yep.
So we're going to be rewatching The Good, The Bad and The Ugly. Wow, wow, wow,
wow, wow. We're like Hanson.
Guarantee that's going to be on the next episode.
Am I the one that sings?
Maybe.
Probably.
Don't you think they all look like goats?
I thought they looked like children from the corn.
It's a bit weird.
Tiny bit.
Our main review, and we haven't revealed this on this episode, is Hereditary.
Yeah.
Yes!
All right, Gemma.
Sorry, I'm really excited about this one.
God. On the way here today, I was waiting for Ben. I looked on my phone. Empire gave it 5 stars.
Oh, there's a surprise.
And they haven't been paid off.
Yeah.
But the reviews overall, everywhere, are saying it's a
absolute game changer in horror.
I think it's on something like 90 out of 100 on Metacritic, which is huge.
But then again, that all doesn't matter because it's all about what we say.
Correct.
And it's not Ocean's 8, so it's even better.
Yes, damn straight. And our topic of conversation is going to be our top three performers, so those actors and actresses who need a comeback. So essentially those people who Tarantino needs to cast. Yeah. Corey.
Stifler.
Always. Yeah.
So I think that'll be a good bit of fun. And we've got a new quiz coming up as well, a one-off quiz. Quiz 2, number 2,
yep.
The End.
Yep.
Which is where we ask each other questions about ourselves and about the crazy, wacky shit we've said on the podcast.
Interesting.
Mark, we've got a load of good prizes again, haven't we?
Absolutely loads. I don't know what they are, but they're going to be amazing.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, I never know, but we will be making sure that they are worthy of entering and just stuff that you couldn't buy in the shops.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do.
Although you can, most of them.
Yeah.
Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Jack Nicholson, baby.
That's going to be amazing.
The absolute
king. We're going to be jacking off to Jack.
Brilliant.
There it is.
Nailed it.
Brilliant.
And on that bombshell, we'll see you in 2 weeks.